Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It is December 23rd, 2008. We're going to be live here for the next 4 hours. And who do we have joining us? Well, briefly in the next hour, the founder of Levies.org, Sandy Rosenthal, who's been protesting the bad job the federal government did of constructing and maintaining the levees and the terrible job they did once the levees failed. But the main reason she's going to be on with us is that she had the Army Corps of Engineers countering her covertly on the internet in a military propaganda campaign. And this ties into a larger picture of government propaganda going on against the American people on the web. Then Detective John Carroll, New Jersey detective, 9/11 first responder, is going to be joining us. He's talking about quitting his job, being a detective for 15 years alone, over the fact that his department will not investigate the evidence of 9/11 being an inside job. And then tied in with that is Luke Radowski, founder of We Are Change that spread worldwide. They now have the FBI harassing them down at Ground Zero and around New York City. And then on top of that, we have Robert K. Wilcox, author of Target Patton. The London Telegraph reported on declassified information and, of course, declassified diaries and an interview with the assassin. What we already knew from military sources that General George S. Patton was assassinated, namely because right at about 12,000, if you want to be technical, 11,500+ U.S. troops were in German prisoner of war camps that got liberated, in quotes, by the communist Russians, the Stalinist Russians, and they wanted their intel. They wanted to pick the brain of the army airmen, of the army forces themselves, of some of the Marines, and they wanted them for slave labor as well. So they took them to Siberia. And, U.S. troops were mixed in with the Russians at this time and witnessed it and got very upset. And Patton, who'd already been criticized for during the war trying rescue missions for U.S. and British troops in prisoner of war camps that were close to the lines when they were in German hands, just couldn't believe it. And so he started raising a ruckus over that. So they killed him deader than a hammer. And that has now come out. So, and even the London Telegraph is convinced of the documents and the evidence. You don't normally see them come out and state something's on the record. Also, you know, Gulf of Tonkin is now admitted to have been a staged terror attack. Thousands of hours of presidential tapes have been released between McNamara and Johnson. I had listened to scores of hours of it and thought that I'd heard it all. I had heard the part of the tapes after they'd staged it, when McNamara was saying, okay, we've staged it. And Johnson saying, okay, what do I say? What do I do? I hadn't heard, because it was 3,000 hours released, in 2004? I can't listen to all of it. Finally, folks have listened to it. More stuff's come out the day before they stage it. They talk about how they're going to stage it. And so the press, when the folks came across the tapes that we heard and others heard, were thinking the military had staged it and then basically told Johnson to tag along. Now the tapes have surfaced. People have listened to it all. And or we hope all of it. We have no way of knowing. I stayed up several nights listening just to find the stuff I did find. Well, there's more now. And we're going to be playing that Gulf of Tonkin as well today. So big show. Sandy Rosenthal, Detective John Carroll, Luke Radowski, Robert K. Wilcox, author of Target Patton. It's all coming up today right here on The Alex Jones Show, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. We come back for an abbreviated transmission Sundays, 4 to 6 p.m. Don't forget the free podcast at Infowars.com.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Done radio broadcast about parasites in the human body. And since we got indoor plumbing and since we got more sanitation and began washing our hands by the 1930s, we saw many types of infectious diseases, parasitical and of other types, plunge. In fact, with the advent a decade later of mass vaccination, we saw actually a rebound in many of the viral and bacterial infections. So most of what we see in reductions of infections and sickness was due to cleanliness, due to washing our clothes, due to not defecating out back the house in a privy, into not having sewage running down the middle of the street. You know, that's how they used to do it. What you don't see in the old Western movies is, you know, that the streets were filled with cow manure and horse manure, pig manure and chicken manure, and then human manure dumped out of buckets onto the streets. You know, South Korea is one of the most industrialized nations in the world and the most internet connected in the world, probably the most technological country next to Japan. But they still, in many cities, dump their feces out of the front of their house. You know, I hate to be gross about all this, but we have a lot of third world populations moving to the United States. And I know that there were no leprosy cases until, 2004. And the Associated Press and World Net Daily both reported 7,000 plus wet leprosy. That means transferable, communicable leprosy cases in 2005. I haven't checked the numbers since then. I know the highly communicable drug-resistant or drug-immune TB is spreading all over the world, killing tens of thousands of Americans a year again, but the media won't basically advertise this to the public, other than hyping up somebody flying on an airplane like it's the lone case and they're so concerned. I know a lot of people, because I've talked to some of the neurosurgeons, some of the brain surgeons here in town, and it's the talk amongst the medical community of all several classes of worms eating people's brains. And the public is always in denial about this. You know, it's kind of like there's a certain type of maggot, certain type of larval fly that does eat live meat. And you know, the screw worm is just one of a whole class of them. And the screw worm, where they basically tie down the World War II Korean and Vietnam vets in Kansas City at one big VA. It was in the Kansas City Star a bunch, and some other VAs in Michigan I saw, in New York, that this particular fly goes up the nose and lays eggs in the sinus, and then maggots eat the brain. And every time I say that, people post it on YouTube, the audio, and then all say I'm a liar. Oh, okay, if you don't know how to Google veterans die in hospital of maggots, then I can't help you. Now, yeah, I mean, if you want to just say I'm making that up, go ahead. But it'd be better to just clean up the VA with the rats and the flies and all the rest of it. Yes, it's true that, you know, most fly larva varieties do not eat live flesh. Okay? But they can go into scrofulous tissue and cause a larger infection. And some of the deaths with the flies entering the sinus were of varieties not known to eat live flesh. Now, you're saying, why am I getting into this? I have all this other important news here in front of me. Well, you know, I have a Fox News report. I have a BBC News report. It's finally hitting the news, but they won't tell you what this is. These are imported pigs out of Mexico. Because in Mexico, they feed the pigs on fresh human feces. I know you don't like to hear that, but you should know what you're eating. Now, it's true. If you feed a pig healthily and you feed it fresh slop, watermelon rinds and things like that, you know, trash out of the house when it's fresh, and you worm the pigs, the hogs, you can eat them. But you know what? I've cut back over the years eating meat, you know, regardless of the way the system is now. I'll still eat a big beefsteak occasionally. But I'm just never eating pork again. I was eating a pork from this Cuban restaurant down the street, pork sandwich. I just had a bad feeling eating it. And, you know, because I know, I mean, there's a reason the Bible, people make fun of it, but there's a reason Leviticus, where the law says, wash your hands. And it says, don't eat pig, don't eat pork, because not just the trichinosis worm, there's a bunch of other worms, and pigs are very similar to us. Most zoological infestations can't transfer from other animals to humans, but with pigs, they readily do. Okay, that's the big issue here, if you study zoological infestations. And people keep living in denial about this. There are thousands of cases of this a year alone. And the media knew that in the report. They just talk about, well, this particular brain surgeon's seen four or five of these this year, and all his colleagues have seen them too. Well, yeah, and they're killing people. So without further ado, this is what becoming a third world nation means. Okay, and if you take for granted not having liver flukes or not having brain worms, then go ahead and laugh at me, and let's just have everybody from the third world in here. Now, I don't blame them wanting to come here. You know, I happen to know that around 10% of the children in Mexico City die of parasites by age 5. I happen to know that 1/3 of the children born in Mexico City are born with one particular disorder of having a tiny fractional brain. Their brain's about 6, 7, 8% of its normal size. They're complete vegetables. The children just die. That's all the toxic waste from the U.S. being dumped down there, and that's a great crime. I'm just telling you folks that that's what we're turning into here. And here it is. The brain-eating worms, mainstream news.
Rosemary Alvarez savors every minute with her kids.
That was a good throw.
Playing ball and laughing. For this mom, each day with them is a gift after coming too close to death last August.
I thought I had the flu. I started feeling tired.
But within days, this soccer coach and PTA president knew it wasn't the flu.
I started feeling numbness in my left arm, blurred vision. I'm still smiling for my kids, but now I can't get out of bed.
Two trips to the ER solved nothing.
CAT scan came back normal, no problem.
But her husband, George, was scared.
She couldn't eat. She could barely walk to the bathroom. So I knew at that point, she was deteriorating really quick.
It all came to a head on the first day of school as their kids aged 9 through 17 headed back to the classroom. Their mom was in an ambulance headed to Barrow Neurological Hospital after an MRI explained those strange symptoms.
It came back. You have a brain tumor. At that exact moment where my heart fell just completely all the way down.
But the news would get worse. Neurosurgeon Dr. Peter Nakaji.
Once we saw the MRI, we realized this is not good. It's something down in her brain stem, which is as deep into the brain as you can be.
George broke the news to the kids.
It was a rough day because it was the first day of school, and they came home with all their stuff from school and all the stuff to sign, and look what I got from my teacher, and where's mom, and what's mom? Well, mom's in the hospital, and this is what happened.
As Rosemary waited for surgery, she worried.
Oh, my God, we just canceled our insurance, 3 weeks ago, and now this happens, and mostly how are we going to pay for this?
And she prayed.
Okay, God, if you're going to take me, but make sure my kids are good.
By the time the surgery got underway, all those PTA moms and neighbors, her kids, they were all praying too.
My girlfriend, she goes, everybody's calling and saying they're praying for you, they're praying for you. Church, they're going to church and they're having the mass, pray for you. And power of prayer. That's what I told them. Power of prayer.
It worked. Dr. Nakaji was expecting to find a brain tumor. He showed me the video as he operated on Rosemary's brain, carefully working, knowing this is the most dangerous spot in the human body to work next to, the brainstem.
Here's the lump. And at this point, it still looks like a brain tumor. And so we're just opening up into the inside.
And then the unexpected. No tumor, instead a worm. Watch as Dr. Nakaji grabs the worm and gently tugs it out of Rosemary's brain. It's still alive. You don't hear him on the tape, but Nakaji actually chuckles.
Which I'm sure is a very strange response for the people in the operating room, but because I was so pleased to know that it wasn't going to be something terrible.
This worm comes from eating undercooked pork, but more frighteningly, it can be spread by people who have the parasite in their bodies and don't wash their hands well after using the bathroom. That is the problem.
And it only takes one person who, is spreading it constantly to get a lot of people exposed, and some of those people are going to go on to develop this problem.
It's impossible to pinpoint exactly when Rosemary contracted this brain worm.
Probably she was one of these very unfortunate people who had somebody handle food for her, that she ingested it, and it got to her brain.
What is normally a rare occurrence has become much more common. Dr. Nakaji has removed 5 of them in the past few months, and other doctors at Barrow, they're seeing more of them too.
I think it could be a fluke, but it does concern me that if we see more and more cases, as one person is infected and starts to spread these, it spreads it to other people who become infected, and then they spread it.
All right, stay there. Let's come back. Now, a lot of times these kill you. Now, do they tell you in this newscast where it's coming from? Absolutely not. Our precious little neighbor to the south. All over the nation are viciously raiding and CPS kidnapping Amish and Mennonite children. They're arresting Amish and Mennonites for selling each other milk. They're arresting people for selling eggs. People that have watermelon stands. But you want to ship a bunch of pigs in here full of brain-eating worms, you go ahead and you do it. It's all part of the curse of evil. There's nothing even mystical about it. It's simple. You got a society of backstabbing, greedy scum that only care about themselves, but nobody cares about anybody else, and everything goes to hell in a handbasket. Who wants to live in a world like that? You know, I mean, I have never wantonly cheated or screwed somebody. Even when people have done things bad to me, I have restraint doing things back bad to them. Because I've found the providence, what the Greeks call that, the logos. What comes around goes around, reap what you sow, that evil comes back on those that do evil. And so I fear God. I fear the spirit of the universe, righteousness. But it's more than that. I don't do good because I even fear God. That's only one level of it. It's because I am trying to be a good person. I am walking in goodness. Does that mean I don't flux back and forth into evil? No, I'm a fallen creature. But I know what feels right in my soul. I know what my conscience tells me is good. I know the dark, volcanic, festian founts of evil. I know what that side is like. I've experienced the dark side. And it just can't even hold a candle, pun intended, to the light. But I don't seek after the light because it's great power. I seek after goodness because it is what fulfills me. It is what I was meant from the formation of my soul and my mother's womb to forever be with. It is what I'm attracted to. Well, the world is in darkness thrall. It is held in the sway of the wicked. You cannot deny that. And so you're going to have worms eat your brains. And you're going to live in denial about it. I mean, there are people on these BBC and Fox News clips saying it's not true. There's people saying there aren't trichinosis worms in pork. And so one guy will pour alcohol or Coca-Cola or whatever. The reason Coca-Cola does that is it has carbon dioxide on it and the worms can't breathe. They put a little snout up. That's why they swim out of the raw pork. Pork cuts. It's not pork sausage. That chops them up, unless it's their eggs. And so, you know, one group, there's thousands of these tests on YouTube, hundreds of millions of views. It's got to be because, I mean, there's thousands of these videos. Some of them have millions of views, tens of millions bare minimum. And it shows people pouring Coke or alcohol, whatever, you know, keeps oxygen from them, on these big slabs of pork steaks, and out come the worms. And people are going, oh, that's fake. There's no worms in there. There's comments like, the government wouldn't allow that. Hey, jackass, let me tell you something, okay? People are dying in every major town and even small towns every day. Tens of thousands die of drug-resistant TB every year. And it's growing exponentially. We got leprosy now in this country. And we got brain-eating worms all over the place, and that's only one of hundreds of different types of parasites. So we all need to be dewormed, especially when we've been eating fast food prepared by third world people. Because it isn't just enough that it comes in the third world pork. There's some parasites in chicken. That isn't bad enough. It's that the third world people, they are host for it. And they don't wipe their hands properly, and they come and put your taco together, or your hamburger together, or your hot dog together, or your dinner together, and then you eat that, and then you die. And by the way, most of the time, the worms end up dying in your brain, and then you get diagnosed with Parkinson's, or, you know, they say you had brain tumors, and then they don't identify that it's the worms. They're covering up the worms. I've been telling you about them for a decade. Was it 1997? Thousands of U.S. school children. I believe it was 6,000. I'm going from memory. Got hepatitis from berries, strawberries, raspberries, bought in bulk by the U.S. school lunch program. The feds bought it in bulk. It had all been sprayed in fresh, not processed, human feces. And then it was frozen shortly out of the fields and then brought and then unfrozen with the, you know, fresh hepatitis for the children. And nothing happened. They have multi-billion dollar funds to quietly pay that off. And then their answer is, well, we'll just vaccinate all of you with the deadly smallpox hepatitis vaccine. That will keep you safe from all of this. It's the same story. Oh, the estrogen-mimicking endocrine disruptors leaching out of the plastic. Instead of changing the plastic we use for everything, there's hundreds of different mixtures that don't leach it. We just so happen to accidentally choose the one that does. I'm sure it's an accident. Everything seems to sterilize. Instead of you know, taking that out that hurts our boys and girls when our boys and girls have hormone problems. You know, when 5-year-old girls go into puberty or boys basically turn into women, they say, oh, we'll just give you hormones to fix it, to mask the other hormones that are leaching out of the plastics. And, oh, we won't tell you to not eat pork. We won't tell you to, you know, have a ban on imported pork out of Mexico filled with trichinosis, as if it's not here now. No, we'll just let you have brain surgery. And, you know, it'll go to your brain stem. And if she'd waited a few more days, it'd have killed her. You know, now she has trouble standing and walking. And, you know, her head's numb. But, you know, there's no discussion of why she got a brain eating worm. Finish up the end of that clip. We were right at the end. Let's finish the last part of that clip.
So that more people are at least at risk.
Meantime, George and Rosemary are stunned, relieved, and a bit creeped out by it all.
It could have ate holes in her brain like a apple.
This whole part of my head from here to here, it's numb. I just learned to live with it.
Rosemary shows off the scars.
I had to learn to walk. To balance.
But Rosemary says the most important thing she learned is how to really live.
I was so busy in life with everything else, and sometimes telling my kid, okay, I'll be right there, or hold on, and no, I can't right now, or no, I'm coming, I'll be right there. I'm not going to miss a moment that we tell me what's on your mind.
It strengthened us again because we almost lost everything. Everything fell apart. When she was gone, everything fell apart, and my kids saw how important their mother was in the house, because even they were, you know, starting to take mom for granted, and we pulled her out of the whole system, and everything just crumbled.
They hope everyone learned something from this story so no one else has to go through what Rosemary did.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Yeah, wash your hands. I mean, what a nice lady, and, you know, what a sweet story, and absolutely, you know, family is first, and it is important, and we shouldn't get caught up in TV and football and the sick beast culture and all the distractions and fashion, and but at the same time, you should be angry. You should ask, why are there brain-eating worms spreading all over? You know, one hospital's now seeing them everywhere. People coming in droves with brain-eating worms, and people are posting on the story that it's not true. They are willfully in denial, just like when the mainstream news admits, yes, we're setting up world government, we've been setting it up covertly, it is tyrannical, and people then go into the Times of London, the Financial Times of London article, and post comments saying it isn't real, because they believe in magical thinking. They believe that if they just say that it doesn't exist, it doesn't. And they're following an older version, a older download, you know, kind of like a Windows 98 of the New World Order, where it doesn't exist. You're insane if it says it exists. There's no such thing as world government. I mean, I remember Limbaugh 15 years ago saying the CFR didn't exist. Now he'll say, oh, they don't run anything. It's just a debating club. But how many of you out there, raise your hands. I see hands going up everywhere. Everybody I know who was a, you know, mainline talk radio listener heard him say, does not exist. Sean Hannity plays helicopters in the background. Says it doesn't exist still. It's a sick joke is what it is, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, we're going to be going live at 12:20 today after our first guest is on the show. We're going to be going live after Sandy Rosenthal is on with us today. And then from 20 into the next hour to the end of the hour before our next guest joins us, New Jersey detective, 9/11 first responder, Detective John Carroll. I want to try to do some justice live on PrisonPlanet.tv with a Building 7 special report. Now, I just decided to do this morning, and the problem is that there are literally hundreds of clips And right now we're trying to assemble just five or six that we have in the constraints, dealing with time. So right now, why do I bring this up? There has been a big new development, a huge development on the Building 7 case. And so often these big developments, but this is one of the biggest, if not the biggest ever. This rivals Silverstein, Hidden in Plain View, 2002, America Rebuilds. Actor Spacey up there narrating it, saying that they made the decision to pull the building and then gave the order and watched it come down. And pull it means just imploded, controlled demolition. And then we have all these other firefighters and police on mainstream news saying, get back, we're bringing the building down, they're going to blow it up. Then we have all these firefighters and police and EMTs on record, separate, who were there and heard the countdown to blow up Building 7. Then we have all the witnesses who heard it on CBS and ABC Radio. I heard it because I was going to get a pizza. I'd been on air from 9 a.m. in the morning after it happened until 2 o'clock when my show went off. And then I ran to Mr. Gaddy's to get a pizza. And I remember flipping around between local news stations, Texas news stations, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when they blew it up. It was 4:30-something here central. And I remember hearing them going, now the Solomon brothers, Building 7, they don't want it to damage other buildings, so they're gonna have a controlled demolition of the building. And I've begged listeners that work at CBS Radio News at the time. I know that's now basically defunct. ABC News Radio, it's still around. People heard it on NPR. I didn't hear that. Others reported it. You'll find those tapes. I don't have the energy, the time, the staff. Well, people have found some more of that stuff. I'm just going to leave it at that until later in the next hour. Radio, TV, you name it. Folks, they blew the thing up. I mean, they said they blew it up on TV. They said they're going to blow it up, and then they blew the thing up. And then you could ask why they blew it up all day long. The point is they then lied about it and said they didn't blow it up. And there needs to be a major investigation about this. And every time we bring out a new video, you know, we post right off America Rebuilds VHS tape bought from PBS, the clip of Silverstein saying they blew up Building 7. And people at first said we were lying. It was a fake video. We show videos of cops saying, get back, we're bringing the building down, they're blowing it up, people say it's fake. Then later they're forced to admit it's real. And then try to poo-poo it. Then we have the BBC reporting on two different BBC channels, the exact same minute, the exact same words, the same script. See, when it's simultaneous on BBC 24 and BBC World, when it's simultaneous, same minute, on the two BBC channels, the news channels, simultaneously saying the exact same words. It wasn't one reporter screwing up. We said somebody gave them a script early. If it's BBC, it was probably Reuters. Reuters is basically run by MI6 and CIA. 2 years after that, the BBC admits that Reuters did give them the mistake that the building had fallen in its own footprint 25 minutes early. Now, CNN and Fox also reported the same thing. They were all getting the same false scripting feed. That is confirmed. That is on record. For anybody that cares. And I just I start thinking about just how hardcore this is. I was so upset by this last night when I saw this latest clip that I tried to go to bed at like 10 because I've been under the weather. And I rolled around in bed for hours. So I got up, did more research for hour after hour. Didn't think to do a special till this morning. And I just started thinking about just how evil the people are that run our society. I mean, they really did carry out the attacks. They really did stage 9/11. I mean, it's a fact. They really did do this. And God knows what they'll do next. I mean, we know they're financially robbing us and looting us with financial terrorism, stealing $8.5 trillion in 8 weeks and counting. We don't know in the last 2 weeks what else they've stolen. You know, that's the latest numbers. They just don't care about society. You know, they'll let pork in filled with worms that eats the public's brains. They'll let tuberculosis spread everywhere. They'll, put sodium fluoride in the water. They'll put mercury in the shots and tell the public with total disdain and contempt that mercury is good for your brains. And the public will sit there begging for it, saying, yes, we want to believe the lie. We want to believe the government. We want to go along with whatever you say and with whatever you do. And this newest clip has just completely and totally blown me away. Because it's just confirmed over and over and over and over and over and over and over again that the federal government blew up Building 7. It was a spook-based CIA, FBI all based in it. And the FBI and the local New York cops, they all know their bosses did it. And most of them still just keep their mouths shut because they're scared for their jobs. Hell, we don't have any future with people like this in control if you don't speak out and get involved. And I just don't even know what to say anymore. I mean, we're in deep, deep trouble. Because it's not a big deal for governments to kill 3,000 of their own people. I mean, they do that throughout history. But to do it in such a spectacular, arrogant, over-the-top fashion just shows amazing will. Amazing will. So, we've got a big announcement on Building 7 coming up at the bottom of the next hour, maybe earlier if they're able to get all the clips. Do you guys have all the video clips I sent you in there? Is that all going well? Because we're on the clock. Are you getting all those clips that were sent to you? So, you were already aware of it. Okay, I'm just having to direct from in here. And that's the problem. There's hundreds of these. And I want to play some of the previous clips and some of the key evidence of Building 7 first and then get to the new clip. Clips. Because it's just all taken together. There is no doubt. And then people go, okay, well, they blew up Building 7. Big deal. They had to do it to save other buildings. Oh, while it's on fire, they go in and they plant all these explosives to blow up a 47-story building that would take weeks for top companies to do, and then most companies couldn't do it with this precision. They tried to blow up the big computer building they built here in Austin a decade ago that they never finished because of the dot-com bust. And it was only, a 10-story building, and they had a company out there for months, and when they tried to detonate it and blow the building up, they couldn't even do it. It didn't even fall, because that happens about a third of the time. But not Building 7, that was done with total free fall, symmetrical precision. A very professional job, brought to you by the folks that can shoot cruise missiles down a chimney, or land a tiny spacecraft on the moon, or land F-18s on the deck of a carrier. Yeah, that's who it was brought to you by. Wasn't brought to you by guys in a cave on walkie-talkies, I'll assure you of that. And it was done to wage war on you so they could have the financial theft they're having now. And that's only one of the latest salvos of many to come. So I'm sorry to have to report this to you, but when you're in a society run by evil, there's no end to it. Once you decide nobody else counts, once you decide you're out for number one and that's all that matters, once you decide you'll cut any corners, well, everybody else starts doing that and you fall apart like North Korea or Mexico. And that's what's happening to the United States. The wages of sin are death. The penalty for sin is death. And you can say, again, cut religion out of it. What is sin? Sin is cheating somebody. Sin is lying. Sin is doing things that are bad for your body. You smoke 3 packs of cigarettes a day, you're going to get lung cancer. You go out and you have a bunch of sexual partners with other promiscuous people, you're going to get diseases. You go out and you eat pork, you got a good chance of getting worms, getting parasites. Well, you let government run all over you and tell you it's God, they're going to rob the hell out of you. They're going to hurt you real bad.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones, only on the GCN Radio Network.
That's what we do. We crash through the lies and disinformation. That's why COINTELPRO. Well, there's no doubt we are the number one attacked free media organization in the world. We are under attack from 1,000 different sources 24/7. We appreciate that because that curse turns into a blessing as more people check out InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com are also some of the most censored websites on the web, and government filters, private corporate filters. So please remember that and continue to spread the word about InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Again, coming up in 30 minutes, we're going to get into the latest Building 7 development. And yes, I'm building it up because I want people to take this seriously as it really is. I mean, I catch myself now. I hear about some new president getting an implantable chip or movie stars all getting implantable chips. Or I, read about things like that. And I'm like, oh, I've been covering that for 13 years. It's not a big deal. As prisons move to make prisoners take it, as groups, as insurance companies move to make Alzheimer's patients take it, as not dozens or hundreds, but thousands of clubs and bars and exclusive resorts make you get a chip. As the inventor of some of the top video games comes out and says that the next wave of consoles, you'll have an implantable chip to, play your World of Warcraft or whatever. People are going to do it, just as the enemy said they would use fads and security to drive it. See, now I should be speaking out against the chip like ever before, but I don't even talk about it anymore. You ever hear me talk about implantable chips anymore? Maybe every 2 or 3 months I talk about it, because I've talked about it and talked about it and talked about it back when everybody laughed at me and said it wasn't coming, when I had Pentagon documents like the January 7th, 2000 Army War College declassified 1985 document where they talked about how they would implant the general public by 2015 with chips, 2025 with brain chips by law, and how they would use fads to drive it. I mean, you can't make that stuff up, but there it is happening. Same thing with this Building 7 business. I mean, now the evidence is so overwhelming, so over the top, that I believe even getting into the physical bombs in the buildings and Thermaid and the fact that it couldn't collapse, I mean, that's all fine and dandy physical evidence. But what about all of the eyewitnesses, the police, the firemen? They need grand juries to subpoena them. Of course, the feds will kill them as fast as you subpoena them. You got to put them in protective custody. Of course, the feds are the ones doing that, so they'll give them an FBI ride to hell like they gave Terrence Yagi, an Oklahoma City cop of the year, when they tortured him to death to find out who else knew stuff. But the point is, we got all these firemen and police on video talking about the bombs and that the building was blown up. And I've gone and interviewed many of them myself. We'll pick a fireman or a cop out, find out who they are. We'll go to New York, interview them, put them on the show, do video. And the debunkers just go, oh, that guy's a liar. Doesn't matter if we have deputy fire chiefs and fire chiefs and deputy emergency managers and police on video saying, get back, they're blowing it up. Or Silverstein saying it. They're still in denial. But more and more clips are surfacing. And I know I heard those clips on 9/11. Well, some of those clips I heard, some of those clips I saw, you have now dug them out. Dig them all out before they shut the web down. We've got to expose what these bastards did with 9/11 if we're going to save this society. Now, get our guest on at 5 after. I want to come back and finish up with this, and then Building 7 coming up in about 30 minutes. And then we got a bunch of other important guests today, thanks to the great work of my producer, Aaron Dykes. All other producers away. We've got Target Patton, the U.S. government's murder of Patton coming up, and a lot more.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
In 1 hour, we have Detective John Carroll joining us. New Jersey detective, 9/11 first responder. Then we've got Luke Radowski with the FBI harassing We Are Change Now in New York. And Robert K. Wilcox, author of Target Patton, U.S. government colluded with the Soviets, the NKVD, to kill George S. Patton. We already knew that, but now they've got the diaries, the eyewitnesses. It's admitted. The London Telegraph even comes right out and says it's conclusive evidence. And why? He didn't want 12,000 U.S. soldiers turned over to the Soviets to be worked to death and tortured. But what did Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, who even at the time was an aide to a top aide to General Dwight D. Eisenhower and a member of the OSS at a very young age, along with David Rockefeller? Now, they go way back, those two boys. Military people are dumb animals to be used and basically killed as cannon fodder. So, see, yeah, 12,000 farm boys, city boys from Detroit, and Michigan, and the plains of Central Texas. Let them die. Our Soviet buds want them. Let them have them. And Patton, you don't like it? Die, sucker. We're the U.S. filth bag. We're here to destroy America, but as long as we wrap ourselves in a flag, you'll love it. The same kind of people blew up Building 7, and they think it's real funny. They think it's real funny. Oh, yeah, they leave 12,000 U.S. POWs in German camps captured by the Soviets. They let them be sent off to be worked to death and tortured and killed. But they wouldn't kill 3,000 of you. No, they love you. The government loves you. I am not going to belabor this. I'm just going to let you know it's available. A word to the wise is sufficient. Every time Ted gets any buffaloes, he lets you know about it. These are the U.S. Mint coins that they've sold out of, and they're saying they may not even make any more. We know they made a finite amount in 2007, 2008. These are 2008 coins. There's only 50 of them, and they're at the same price they were 2 weeks ago when gold was over $100 less than it is now. Ted's just passing it on with the great position. He bought these 2 weeks ago. They just now came in. So 50 gold buffaloes, first come, first serve, at the price of this show. But you got to tell them it's the radio offer, 800-686-2237. And, yes, he bought gold at 770 about a week and a half ago. It's, you know, 830, 840 right now, up quite a bit. British sovereign gold coins at 252 apiece. Those are uncirculated, by the way, just incredible value. And francs at 203. Most of those are uncirculated as well. They have Walking Liberty half dollars at 840 apiece. Another great deal on silver half dollars. Now, you really can't beat those deals. But the buffaloes will go quickly, so I recommend you call on those. Quite a deal. They're all great deals, but the buffaloes are just such a handsome coins. You're getting them pretty much at melt with the collectible value on top of. This is the prettiest coin. This is personally my favorite coin. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. In fact, I sent one of these to Charlie Sheen about a month ago as a present for his new child coming along. Again, 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. Call today, ladies and gentlemen. Brokers will be there all night.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Sandy Rosenthal, the founder of Levies.org, is our guest, and she had a run-in repeatedly. And they checked the IP addresses, first the handles, and then the IP addresses of the Army Corps of Engineers going on, encountering them, attacking them, criticizing U.S. citizens. Now, whether you're for or against what the Army Corps did, or whether you want to blame the feds or the state, I believe there's blame to go all around, particularly the feds cutting communication lines and blocking aid so they could run everything and then claim that they needed more funding and power later. That was really what happened, problem, reaction, solution. Regardless, that's not the issue here. It's that the military is out propagandizing against the American people more and more these days, and they admit that they are doing this and are quite proud of this. CENTCOM, NORTHCOM, and it's all part of the White House buying fake news propaganda packages, and that's going to continue under Obama. So I wanted to get her on for just 15, 20 minutes or so. We appreciate Sandy Rosenthal from Levies.org coming on with us. Sandy, out of the gates, tell us a little bit about the organization and now what you're going through.
Well, we are Levies.org, the only organization in America trying to focus attention on the fact that what happened here in New Orleans, we were not destroyed by a hurricane. It was a flood that ravaged the city. And the reality is this is an engineering failure, the worst in the world since Chernobyl. And the Corps of Engineers is by federal law responsible for that flood protection. But right after the storm, a disinformation campaign started where the U.S. Army Corps authorized a $1 million grant for engineering science societies to go out and do a traveling PR show. We discovered this in a FOIA request. You've also got the fact that the U.S. Army Corps investigated their own work after the flooding. You investigate yourself, what do you think you're going to find? And as for outside peer review of that investigation, the Corps gave them $2 million for it and awarded them with medals of honor 18 months before their work was finished. But the main message here is that U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, from the beginning, has been trying to shift blame to the citizens by claiming that the city interfered with their grand plan when that is not the case at all. And this is important for your listeners because there's U.S. Army Corps levees all over the place in all 50 states, and they're in bad condition. And finally, and that's why you have me on today, is there's Corps employees using Corps computers posing as average citizens to post information and disrupt legitimate discussions with personal attacks on the city. It's an unethical use of news and blogs.
Well, it certainly is. And again, they're not telling people that the Army Corps of Engineers, they're acting like they're John Q. Public, and they're doing this from government computers. And I think it's clearly part of a larger campaign that they're engaged in. So specifically break down what happened and how you caught them and now how they're responding since it made television.
Sure, I'd be happy to tell you. I maintain two blogs, and I noticed on both of them I've been receiving for years, but they've recently stepped up in their frequency, attacks where I essentially I am maligned, supporters are aligned, citizens are aligned, and they're trying to rewrite history. They're trying to say that local officials, you know, got in the way and blocked the Army Corps' plans for the flood protection. And I know this is, I know it's not true. I know that they're making up the facts. And but as I said, I'm used to them. But then I you know, it kind of got into my head, well, gee, let me see, you know, it's kind of like looking at caller ID. And the IP address is clearly there, visible for anyone that wants to look. And so all I did was I took that caller ID, essentially, and plugged it into a program free on the Internet that anyone can access called whois.net, www.whois.net. And I plugged in the IP address, that's what it's called, in that little box, and up came a military address. And that's how it all started. And I realized that, that you know, immediately that something was very wrong.
Well, look, they've been sanctioned to do this on my websites, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, and others. They don't even hide the fact. I mean, they come on with their handles, and people could say, well, that's somebody using their handle. No. Then you go to their Facebook, their MySpace, or their, you know, their brigade website, whatever. They'll be wearing PSYOP patches. I mean, they're really mindless thugs. They aren't even good spies. They will be on there, you know, with all their anti-American rhetoric, their anti-free speech rhetoric, their talk about how they want to cap U.S. citizens. So really, it's a group of brigands. I'm not saying our whole military is like that, but these little special units they've sifted amongst the detritus and found the particularly nasty blobs and put them into positions of power, and they're just 24/7 attacking basically anybody that criticizes anything that the foreign banks that own our government are doing.
Well, in this case in New Orleans, and in just 10 seconds I'll explain why it's important to know this, but in New Orleans you got a federal agency, the U.S. Army Corps, responsible for protecting the city and who let the city down to almost near total destruction, hiding their identities and posting anonymous comments on news sources, blogs, and forums to cover their tracks, rewrite history, and shift the blame for the flooding away from itself and onto the citizens of New Orleans. Now, why is that important to your listeners? Because there's levees in all 50 states in bad condition, and the U.S. Army Corps, I believe, has a lot at stake here in trying to protect their reputation. And your listeners, all they have to do is go to a website that we created called areweatrisk.org, areweatrisk.org, and all you have to do is type in your zip code, and your listeners can find out if they're at risk at well.
Well, I mean, obviously, flooding happens. It's always going to happen. And I don't think the Army Corps of Engineers can keep us safe from everything. A government big enough to give you anything you want is big enough and will, by the way, always take everything away.
Alex, I do need to point out we were not flooded by a hurricane. We were flooded because of engineering failure. 53 levee breaches, 53, and they were due to engineering failure, not just simply a case of a bad storm.
No, listen, I'm not debating that with you. I was talking about the rest of the nation, and I was just stating that the people need to talk to their governments about the double set of books, the comprehensive annual financial reports, and say, look, we don't want all that invested in offshore hedge funds and derivatives. We, you know, the states need to take control, and they need to build up the levees all over the Mississippi and other major rivers. I mean, don't you think that's a good idea? Because, I mean, the feds just, you know, they can't help it. They're going to always bid rig. They're always going to steal. It's a wicked group.
Well, I'm going to answer your question, and you asked me if that's a good idea, and I'm going to tell you what we think. We think that we don't yet know what happened to these levees in New Orleans as long as the investigation was conducted by the organization responsible for its performance.
Because they're involved for cover-up, sure. And, I mean, that's a conflict of interest. Well, going back, when was the last big flood in New Orleans? Because it was admitted then that the Army Corps did blow up the levees that time.
Okay, there were two floods. There was one in 1965, and that's when the federal government came in and decided that it would take over our flood protection. And by federal mandate, it took the responsibility for building our levees away from us and gave it to the U.S. Army Corps, and that's all outlined in the Flood Control
Act. But there was
one
before that where they did blow up the levee.
That was, you're talking, I believe, about the flood, a flood that occurred in 1927.
Yeah.
And that was when the Army Corps came in and said, when the Congress came in and set up a law, Flood Control Act of 1928, that says if anything goes wrong with an Army Corps of Engineers flood protection project, they cannot be sued.
Well, that's why people think they blew up the levees this time, is because it's on record that the Army did blow up the levees to flow the lower areas instead of the richer areas. I mean, that's admitted. That did happen.
What's admitted?
Oh, you're not aware that they blew up the levees back in the 20s?
Oh, okay. In the 19, I just was asking you what the.
You know, I forget. Yeah. You know, I knew about it, and I saw a PBS show about it, and memory escapes me. But my mother-in-law bought me a Pulitzer Prize-winning book that came out 2 years ago about it, and it's all about the last flood. So you're not aware of that.
Okay, I was the question I was asking you, Alex, was trying to clarify what you were asking.
No,
me.
I'm saying you're
I
aware
you
that they okay,
if
whatever.
There was an explosion if these levees were blown up 3 years ago. That's what I thought you were asking me. I was just trying to clarify your question.
Okay, I'm talking about the previous time. I mean, that's why locals think it did happen 3 years ago is because it's admitted that it did happen previous.
There are some locals who were here. Who didn't know that the levees could break, and some stayed here, and there have been reports that that they heard the sound of the levees breaking, and they reported that it sounded like they were being blown up, and that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, no, but what I'm referring to, I'm just asking you as a poll.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Are you aware that the Army Corps of Engineers admits they blew up the levees previous to that? 60-70 years before that?
I believe that was reported in the book Rising Tide by John Barry.
Yeah, that's right. That was the book Rising Tide. But that's not hidden. That's not a secret.
That's correct.
So, I mean, they blew it up before to flood the poor areas, and they admitted mm-hmm. that.
That's correct.
So that's my point.
Again, I appreciate you having me on the show. I can only tell you what I know, and what I know is that members of the Army Corps have hidden their identities, logged on to their office computers, and tried to rewrite the history of the flooding in New Orleans. And there are U.S. Army Corps projects in every single state of this nation, and it's important that your listeners
yeah.
understand that they need to be vigilant in their own part of the country.
What have they done since you countered them? Are they just still...
Initially, the U.S. Army Corps spokesman issued a statement saying there were 1,600 people at the New Orleans district, and they considered it an isolated incident. Keep in mind that we didn't ever say that this flooding, that these remarks came from the New Orleans district. We didn't know where they came from. And then 3 days later, Colonel Alvin Lee, the head of the New Orleans district, issued a personal apology to me.
Well, that's good. Stay there. Let's hear more about that and levees on your website when we get back to the organization.
Pienso que un sueño parecido no volverá más. Y me pintaba las manos y la cara de azul. Y de provisa el viento rápida me llevó. Y me hizo volar en el cielo infinito.
The founder of levees.org, Sandy Rosenthal. Sandy, I totally agree with you about the Army Corps and the shoddy workmanship and the rest of it. I know there's a disinformation campaign against the locals. I know the feds, FEMA came in and cut the police communications lines. That's admitted. That's why the cops walked off their job. There was no communication. I mean, it's not just FEMA and the Army Corps. It looks like not caring or being a bunch of buffoons. It looks from every angle like it was completely malicious. I wonder why.
Well, there's a whole lot at stake here. You have to realize the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has a tremendous amount of power, but in the city of New Orleans, they've had a spectacular failure. The whole world saw that failure. And so the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is very likely concerned about losing at least some of that power, maybe not all of it, but certainly some of it. And you need to know that this started within weeks of the storm. The city was not even drained yet, and already the Department of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, ordered these investigations I spoke of, with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which I found out through a FOIA request, already lined up who would do essentially a PR campaign for the Corps. I spoke a few minutes ago about this traveling slideshow by the American Society of Civil Engineers. The Corps paid for that and in a grant, and if you listen to it or watch it, you can immediately see that it was the role of the U.S. Army Corps was minimized, and the strength of the storm and the vulnerability of the region was maximized.
Well, in closing here, how can folks get involved? How can they bring justice to this? How can we get the levees properly fixed? And are you satisfied with the apology from the colonel?
In answer to your last question, are we satisfied? We know for a fact that there are more than one people at the Corps, hiding their identities and trying to rewrite the story of the flooding. And this Colonel Alan Lee has only admitted that it's the actions of one individual. As far as what can your listeners do, the absolute number one best thing they can possibly do is go to, www.levees.org and simply join us. It's free, and all we ask is your email address. And if you don't want to get email alerts, just click the little box and let me know.
All right. Well, as this develops and if anything else happens, please stay in contact. And I really appreciate you standing up, not just for the people of Louisiana and New Orleans, but also for the people of the country, because the problems with the levees around the nation not even being repaired is obviously a very, very serious issue. And you're right. Until we have a true impartial investigation about mm-hmm. levee strengths around the country, mm-hmm. how can we even set about fixing them? So
right.
It's just all part of this mm-hmm. culture of corruption where things are just basically falling apart.
And I promise this is my last sentence. That Midwest flooding clearly showed that levee failure and flooding is definitely not a coastal problem.
No, it's a problem everywhere, and flooding's always been a serious problem. I mean, look at the Dutch. They didn't mm-hmm. decide to just let the sea win. They actually beat the sea and expanded their country quite a bit. So, well, listen, great having you on with us, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, folks, when we come back out of break, we're going to go live at prisonplanet.tv for the balance of the show today, the next 2.5 hours. I'm going to do the next 35 minutes, 5 minutes in the next hour, so I have time, getting into Building 7 and the latest developments there that are huge. And I've tried to build this up with some suspense because things like this deserve suspense. I mean, we need to understand how serious this is, what a big deal this is, what a big deal all these things are. You know, it comes out that Dick Cheney was planning to stage terror attacks against U.S. ships 6 months ago. Comes out in New Yorker magazine. MSNBC picks it up, and nobody even talks about it. It's like no big deal. And then now more evidence has come out, stacked on top of evidence and evidence, that the government blew up Building 7. And, this is a huge deal. So some big new developments. That is coming up after this quick break, ladies and gentlemen. So please stay with us. We'll be live at prisonplanet.tv for folks viewing. And, of course, on the AM and FM dial as well, the streams at Infowars.com. It is the 23rd day of December 2008, here in the waning days of 2008, a year where we saw MSNBC and the New Yorker magazine report that Dick Cheney, according to White House sources, planned to stage terror attacks against U.S. ships in the Strait of Hormuz using U.S. Navy SEALs dressed up like Iranians, but the plan was nixed by the Pentagon when Admiral Fox Fallon resigned, refusing to go along with killing his own sailors and Marines. This is the type of issues that we're dealing with here. Throughout history, governments have staged terror attacks. And in the next 30 minutes here at PrisonPlanet.tv, I'm going to break down the story of Building 7. Now, I think later next week, I'm going to do a full hour on this and really go through the majority of the clips, because there are hundreds, and we do have time constraints here. But I saw a new clip up on prisonplanet.com last night, and a story this morning by Paul Watson. And it says, New York Fire Department Lieutenant admitted plan to take down Building 7. Now, he is on MSNBC, and he is in the clip openly saying that Building 7's been burning, and it may fall on its own, but or we may take it down. Now there's no debating what "we may take it down" means. Now, this alone could be, still something to investigate, something very suspicious. We've never had a modern steel building fall the way Tower 1, 2, or 7 did. Tower 7 was the 47-story building, also owned by Silverstein, a second-largest spook compound in the world outside of D.C. And what happened there? What happened with this case? Well, Silverstein went on a program called America Rebuilds and says that there had been such a loss of life and a damage that the fire department made the decision to pull the building, and so they gave the order and watched the building come down. They pulled the building, and they gave the order to pull it and watch the building come down. Now, pull it is a demolition term for controlled demolition. And in the very same documentary on PBS, 2002, they cut to the next scene and show them blowing up the wreckage of Building 6 that was still standing, even though one of the towers fell on it. And they go, getting ready to pull Building 6. And they have a controlled demolition. And then also pull it with cranes the direction they want it to fall so it doesn't damage other structures. Now, we have videos of firefighters and police saying, get back, they're getting ready to bring the building down. Then we have eyewitnesses that we've gone, firefighters, emergency workers, police officers that say they heard the countdown, that they were told to get back from the building. And then I remember going, I've been on air all day that day, and I remember rushing up to the local pizza place, I've told the story many times, to get a pizza, takeout, and flipping between channels during news, and hearing CBS radio news, I believe now defunct, I never hear it anymore, and ABC radio news, both reporting, Building 7, the Solomons Brothers building, they don't want it to damage other nearby buildings, so they may bring it down. They may bring it down. Because, see, the feds had to put out their story to the police and firemen. Hey, don't worry. We don't want to damage stuff. We're going to bring it down. And the police and firemen didn't ask, well, it takes weeks or months to rig a building properly. How are you going to do that? Now, since then, it's come out that Fox, CNN, and BBC all reported in the hour before Building 7 fell at 5:30 in the afternoon Eastern, that the building had fallen due to fires and its own footprint at free fall. They got the exact script right, and BBC simultaneously on both channels said the exact same thing. So we said, that's false scripting. That's a live video. One of them's on a rooftop. One of the fellows is on the street. And so I said, somebody sent out a news feed that was planted by intelligence. We know intelligence fills the BBC, fills Reuters, fills AP. That's it. That's been in congressional hearings back in the 70s. Somebody planted that story earlier, kind of like stories were planted in the Eastern press in Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, that Lee Harvey Oswald had been caught and had killed Kennedy before he'd even been captured, his name released. You know, it was in newspapers. Fletcher Prodi always talked about that, one of the heads of black ops in the Pentagon. So here we had this. And then people, the Pentagon debunkers came out and said, we made it up that was a tape, that was a recording on the BBC. And then later BBC said, no, that was real, that was live, we just made a mistake. So we have all of this. And so today I wanted to go over some of the clips. But first, let's play about 5 minutes here at prisonplanet.tv from Terror Storm. It's a 2+ hour film that I produced dealing with the history of government-sponsored terror. And we spend just a few minutes on Building 7. This is a small part of that. And then I want to go back through some of the other clips and the new clip and why this is such a big deal. Here's that clip.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
We have the owner of the World Trade Center complex admitting on tape that he ordered the building demolished on the afternoon of 9/11.
I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse.
During our on-the-ground investigations in New York City over the last 5+ years, we've talked to scores of eyewitnesses who had claimed that police and firemen told them to get back from Building 7 because it was going to be brought down or, quote, explode.
Building 7, while I was listening to live feed from our local public radio station later in the afternoon, they talked about Building 7. Building 7 was fine. There was no airplane that hit it. And then they even began to ruminate on the air about demolishing the building. I said, well, I don't know. I mean, you can put out fires. You know, why would you talk about demolishing a building that, you know, it wasn't hit by anything? You know, the fires weren't bad or anything like that.
I will say that I spoke to a cop on 9/11 who said that it was going to come down. I don't know how he knew that.
Now, archived CNN footage has surfaced showing video footage of a New York City police officer telling cameramen and civilians to get back from Building 7 because the building was going to blow up.
Building is about to blow up. Move it back.
All right, guys.
We are walking back. The building is about to blow up. Flame, debris coming down.
Just in the last few seconds, another building, building number 7, one of the buildings in support of the World Trade Center towers, has collapsed. This is no small building, as you can see, at 47 stories. It would stand out in most American cities.
And then, in late February of 2007, 9/11 researchers reviewing archives of live news coverage from September 11th discovered to their shock that BBC World had reported that Building 7, also known as the Solomon Brothers Building, had completely collapsed over 20 minutes before its actual implosion. First anchors at the London News Desk reported it.
Now, more on the latest building collapse in New York. You might have heard a few moments ago I was talking about the Solomon Brothers Building collapsing. And indeed it has. Apparently that's only a few hundred yards away from where the...
They then cut to BBC reporter Jane Standley in New York, who also reported that the Solomon Brothers building had fallen, all the while with the building clearly visible behind her through the window.
Our correspondent, Jane Standley. Jane, what more can you tell us about the Solomon Brothers building and its collapse?
Well, only really what you already know. Details are very, very sketchy. There's almost a sense downtown in New York behind me, down by the World Trade Centers, of just an area completely closed off as the rescue workers try to do their job. But this isn't the first building that has suffered as a result. We know that part of the Marriott Hotel next to the World Trade Center also collapsed as a result of this huge amount of falling debris from 110 floors of the two twin towers of the World Trade Center. As you can see behind me, the Trade Center appears to be still burning. We see these huge clouds of smoke and ash, and we know that behind that there's an empty piece of what was a very familiar New York skyline.
Another BBC news channel, BBC 24, also got the word and reported the collapse 20 minutes before it fell.
enormous building in New York has collapsed. It is the 47-story Salomon Brothers building, which was situated very close to the World Trade Center right there in this financial capital.
It then emerged that Aaron Brown of CNN reported from a rooftop overlooking Ground Zero that Building 7 had collapsed over an hour before it actually fell.
We are getting information now that one of the other buildings, Building 7 in the World Trade Center complex, is on fire and has either collapsed or is collapsing. And you, to be honest, can see these pictures a little bit more clearly than I. But Building number 7, one of the buildings in this very large complex of buildings that is the Trade Center, there were the two towers, but then there are a number of support buildings around it, and now we are told that there's a fire there, and that building may collapse as well, as you can see. We can see, as we look now back downtown, we can see the billowing smoke.
CNN and BBC's reports conclusively prove media prior knowledge and false start scripting of Building 7's controlled demolition. Couple that with hundreds of police, firefighters, and rescue workers stating that they were told to get back from 7 because it was going to be brought down. There can be no doubt that Building 7's destruction was an orchestrated inside job. 9/11 was just one salvo in an ongoing war against the free peoples of the planet. It's all part of their terror storm.
All right, Pentagon, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us. So that's a little bit of background. There, we have scores of police, firemen, EMTs, video clips, audio clips, with them saying, yeah, they said the building was rigged, that the feds were blowing it up. Let's go ahead first, though, and play Larry Silverstein on national TV saying they made the decision to pull it, gave the order, and watched it come down. Before I play you the deputy fire chief, this is a new clip, live from the day, MSNBC. That's right. But let's play Silverstein now. Here it is.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse.
Now, none of this even gets into the physical evidence, the bomb blast, the squibs, the building collapsing in on itself in a symmetrical implosion, the firefighters on multiple national TV shows saying they were inside the buildings. It was like molten steel was running. Only Thermate can do that. Let's go ahead and play that clip of New York Fire Department personnel stating there was molten steel. Then we'll get to the new clip. Here it is.
Down below, and you'd see molten steel. Molten steel running down the channel rails. Like you're in a foundry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like lava.
And we cut it quickly there because there's been some cussing. But again, those are, you know, senior fire department people telling you. Again, the temperatures from fires can't do that. Now, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, and we have the name of this fire department commander. It's in a story. FDNY lieutenant admitted plan to take down WTC-7. And this was on MSNBC. And his name, it's all on record. We've got all these other people, cops and firemen. Some of them have been killed. Some of them have died mysteriously. Now that they've spoken out, we hope nothing happens to him. He should go public quickly now that we found this. And I'm telling you, folks, I heard city officials and FEMA officials on the radio saying they were going to blow it up. Who's going to go get the ABC radio archives of that day at like 4 o'clock? 4 o'clock Central, like 5 o'clock Eastern, 30 minutes before they blew it up. I'm at Mr. Gaddy's getting a pizza. I'm flipping around. I'm waiting in the parking lot for the pizza. You know, I got there a little bit early, and I'm listening to the radio. So I'm going to run home and do my own radio show. And I'm sitting there, and I'm hearing them talk about how they're blowing it up. And see, that's why I didn't even think about it. No way. They said they blew that up. Oh, shut up, conspiracy theorist. You didn't hear that on the radio. You didn't hear any of that. You understand? Let's go ahead and play this clip. Here it is. Here's the new clip.
In fact, you were just told by police that you should move out of your apartment, Fabiana.
Yes.
You've got Carolina here.
Yes. They advise us to leave because we have...
Oh, my God. Look behind us. Please pan in this way. Please be careful of your baby. This is it.
That's the building coming down.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. No. No. We're... Listen.
Okay.
We'll be all right. We'll be all right.
We're okay. I think we're okay. Ashley, I think we're okay.
All right. We're going to have to move this way. We're going to have to move. That cloud is coming this way.
Yeah. Ashley, get out of there. Leave the camera on, man, if you need to, and get out of there. What we've been fearing all afternoon has apparently happened. We were watching number 7 World Trade, which was part of the ancillary damage of the...
I started this too late. We're going to come back from break and play it unedited here, because then they go to the fire department lieutenant, and he says, yeah, you know, they were talking about, you know, bringing it down, blowing it up, and, you know, now I guess that's happened. So, again, this was on NPR. This was on CBS. This was on ABC. This was on MSNBC. That's Matt Lauer. And then we have, you know, we went and found the cops that are in the video on the ground with Amy Goodman when they're being told, get back, get back. Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, she witnessed all of this. She's now been forced to admit that there should be an investigation of 7. I mean, this is incredible, folks. Stay with us.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
We do this with very heavy heart. You know, I know that 9/11 was an inside job. I know criminal elements in our government admittedly have staged over 200 declassified terrorist attacks. But it still shook me last night when I saw this newest clip of hundreds with a New York Fire Department commander talking about, and again, we're not saying they're complicit or involved. This is the official story they're given. Oh, yeah, it's endangering other buildings. We're going to have to bring it down. It may collapse on its own, or we may have to blow it up. And then that's what Silverstein also says. And then you have all the witnesses to that happening. And then you have the deputy head of emergency management talking about bombs going off in it before Tower 1 or 2 fell, and then he mysteriously dies quite quickly, Barry Jennings. I mean, this just gets more and more serious, folks. We have all these fire department people, all these police on record saying that there was a plan to blow it up, and no one asked, how was there a plan to blow it up? That takes weeks to do. And then now they say they never said that, and we're conspiracy theorists. Folks, it is an inside job. It really happened. You think it's fun for me to confront these murderers? You think this is a fun job? I know who they are. You know, I have a lot of courage, but sometimes I wake up 3, 4 a.m., and it's not even fear. It's more of a shock. It's like, oh, my God, I'm actually fighting these people. I'm actually on the air confronting people that would kill 3,000 people on 9/11. These bastards have to be defeated. My only fear is that we won't be effective. Now, here is the clip. This is huge. This is Matt Lauer talking to one of the fire department commanders about the plan to bring down Building 7. Here it is.
In fact, you were just told by police that you should move out of your apartment, Fabiana.
Yes.
You've got Carolina here?
Yes. They advise us to leave because we have...
Oh, my God. Look behind us. Please pan in this way. Please be careful of your baby. This is it.
That's the building coming down.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. No. No. We're... Listen. We'll be all right. We'll be all right.
We're okay. I think we're okay. Ashley, I think we're okay.
All right. We're going to have to move this way. We're going to have to move. That cloud is coming this way.
Yeah. Ashley, get out of there. Leave the camera on, man, if you need to, and get out of there. What we've been fearing all afternoon has apparently happened. We were watching number 7 World Trade, which was part of the ancillary damage of the explosion and collapse of the other two. We've been talking all day about how fast these plumes of smoke move. You're watching one on the move right now that is building dust. Look at the wider shot on the left from across the river in New York. This was a 40-story building they've been watching all day. This is like watching the collapse of an active volcano. And the dust from it is not unlike that from a volcano. We are on the phone with New York Fire Department Lieutenant David Restuccio, Lieutenant, where are you right now?
I'm at the corner of Northmore Street and Greenwich Street.
Can you confirm it was number 7 that just went in?
Yes, sir.
And you guys knew this was coming all day?
We had heard reports that the building was unstable and that eventually it would either come down on its own or it would be taken down. I would imagine it came down on its own. And we are just awaiting now at our triage for any other casualties or any other injuries.
Everybody all right where you are, Lieutenant?
Very, very much so right now.
All right, back that up about 30 seconds. Did you hear? See, they put out the official story early in the day.
In fact,
because building 7, for some reason, was supposed to go out in the morning, but the plane from Pennsylvania, something happened. It didn't get hit by a plane, so they didn't have that big spectacular, but it was still wired. It was still a spook house. It was still ready to go. FBI, CIA, all in there. So for whatever reason, they then tell everybody all day, it's going to come down. It's going to come down. Before there even fires in it, they're telling people, get out. It's going to come down. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are live here at PrisonPlanet.tv. We have a police detective, a survivor of 9/11 joining us. Coming out in the next segment, then later in the hour, Luke Radowski being harassed by FBI now for protesting the fact that 9/11 is an inside job. But what is the system going to do? Is there's hundreds of clips of firemen and police and fire commanders saying, yeah, they were going to blow the building up. They were going to bring it down. We were told it would fall on its own when it had no fires in it, and then it got them. Or that we would bring it down. So that's in case it leaked, they were planting bombs. Oh, yeah, we're bringing it down. Why did they do that? I don't know. The point is they did blow it up. That shows foreknowledge and involvement. Let's play that clip. This is the new clip. And again, there's countless other ones out there. We just need you to dig them up and find them. Because I remember seeing them and hearing them that day. I didn't know what I was seeing, though. I'm like, they're going to blow up that building. That didn't make sense. And then later they say it just fell on its own and you kind of forget about it, focus on the big towers, and then it comes up. And all these disinfo operatives on the web, on every issue, say we're a liar, say it isn't real, or say it isn't true, or say BBC didn't report the fall of 7 before it fell, and then BBC admits they did, and then they come out and attack something new. To those government operatives, and I've seen them at Ground Zero, they'll walk right over, and you'll be like, you're a government agent, aren't you? And they're just like, we're going to get you, truthers. And you can tell some of these folks are probably involved in it. It is just truly, truly sick. As more and more evidence comes out, those that have been camp followers have a cold, or minions of this whole thing, they are really going to look bad. You're really going to feel bad because now you've made yourselves complicit in the murder of 3,000 people. Let's go ahead and finish up with the clip. One more time with the fire lieutenant talking about how, yes, there was a plan to bring it down, Building 7, that it was going to fall on its own or we were going to bring it down. Here it is.
Northmore Street and Greenwich Street.
Can you confirm it was number 7 that just went in?
Yes, sir.
And you guys knew this was coming all day?
We had heard reports that the building was unstable and that it eventually would either come down on its own or it would be taken down. I would imagine it came down on its own. And we are just awaiting now at our triage for any other casualties or any
all
other
right.
injuries.
Everybody all right where you
so
are?
So there you have it. Again, confirmed by Silverstein, by firefighters, senior firefighters, by all these people that Building 7, there was a plan to bring it down. And what did Larry Silverstein say? Let's play that clip one more time. There had been such a great loss of life that we made the decision to pull it, and so we gave the order and watched it come down. Pull it, demolition term for controlled demolition. We gave the order to pull it and then watch the building come down. I mean, what does that mean to you? And then you see the building with the blast points and the rest of it and all of it happening. Here it is.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse.
So what happens is, as we get dozens and dozens and dozens of more clips every year of firefighters, police, you know, Amy Goodman down there on the ground hearing the countdown, you know, then suddenly the building falls. Again, we don't make a big enough deal about this. I mean, we know it's an inside job, so we don't go out and point out that the evidence just piles up. This is huge. And I demand a grand jury in New York, New York State, somewhere else in the country, because people were lost from all over the U.S., all over the world. Call some of these people before the feds kill them, like this fire lieutenant, and say, okay, you know, exactly who told you they were planning to bring the building down? Again, ladies and gentlemen, we know it's an inside job. Here's the evidence in front of you. It just keeps stacking up. Stay with us.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
He is a New Jersey police detective who responded on 9/11. So he's a 9/11 first responder. Detective John Carroll. I know he's had Richard Gage in to speak to police in the New Jersey, New York area, has a lot of courage, and now he's becoming more vocal. And I already had him set up for the show yesterday, but it dovetails perfectly into what I've been covering in the last 30 minutes here at PrisonPlanet.tv and, of course, on the radio show that we're simulcasting with right now. And that is that, I mean, firemen, police, I've got a bunch of other audio and video clips I'm going to play this hour. On record saying they heard the countdown, but not just them saying that to us now. We have CNN and MSNBC and others where they're saying, get back, they're bringing it down. And then the feds, when they approach you at ground zero, they go, how dare you? I mean, these guys are wicked. They'll say, how dare you? They'll just be like looking at you with dagger eyes. How dare you say the cops and firemen blew it up? We go, we didn't say that. They were just giving the official story. They were bringing it down for everybody's safety and then told to shut up. They're like, oh, and they'll tell the crowd, you hear him? They say the fireman did it. Again, and then they'll look to see how the op's working. I mean, these people are sick. They are sick. And this was a giant false flag attack, and there's all the evidence, thousands of pieces. But Building 7, not just the evidence of thermate and thermite and the explosions and the building falling at free fall and NIST now having to admit that. It's that for some reason another plane didn't hit it. Something else developed. Something else. You know, guys, when I go into these coughing fits, just put a screen up because I'm in here sick, and I just put a screen up whenever you see me go into cough so we don't torture people with that on television, or I may not be able to continue the show here. Yes, we can't. All right. Anyways, again, I'm in here even though I've been sick the last few days because this information is too important, so just bear with me, folks. What you can do is just aim a camera at the wall and then cut to that. All right. Look, you know, I'm way past, and this isn't about radio, this isn't about my films, this isn't about anything with me. I mean, this, other than the fact that I'm in danger from fighting these murdering bastards, and everybody else is that fights them, but we're in greater danger of not standing up to them. And this is real, folks. We're really fighting people that would attack their own country and then pose as saviors on top of the smoking pile of rubble and dead. And we really do have a corrupt elite that is just completely out of control. And they really did stage the terror attacks. I mean, even if you don't want to believe it, they really do make big mistakes. And it was known to the police and firemen that, they at least blew up Building 7. And it would take weeks or months to do that. And it was a spook house full of FBI, Defense Intelligence, CIA, you name it. And they are killing 9/11 first responders that are blowing the whistle. And they are going after We Are Change. And they do have FBI harassing them. And I do get death threats over this. And this is real, ladies and gentlemen. This is real. And you just heard a fire department commander on record saying that they'd been told that the feds had a plan to bring down Building 7 to, quote, protect other buildings, which they did. It went down perfectly in its own footprint. So enough said. Detective John Carroll, I appreciate you coming on the show with us today. First, I know you were listening earlier. Give me your take on the latest, you know, mainstream live clip where police, firemen, and others were said, we were told to get back. They were going to bring down 7. We were expecting this all day. Again, not saying fire and police are involved, but now after the fact, when they cover up, they become complicit to some degree. You are not complicit because you're still the hero you were, fighting that day to help the people and fighting today to expose the truth. But God forbid our police and firemen do come complicit by playing along with this. So, Detective Carroll, thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me, Alice.
You bet.
Absolutely. I think it's up to all law enforcement, military law enforcement. We swore to protect this country. This is what, and we're compensated for it. You know, I'm a Jersey City detective. On 9/11, I mean, we knew Plaza. I didn't know it was Plaza 7 at the time. Nobody. We just heard a building was definitely coming down. We ran out. We were just, evacuated. But anybody that's not coming forward in law enforcement at this point is complicit after the fact. Would you agree with that?
No, I agree with you. Anybody who's seen the facts and who is in denial. And I've had so many police come up and shake my hand or wave or thank me when I'm down at Ground Zero, but then most of them don't want to go on camera. Some do now wave at us and give us thumbs up, even commanders, but they won't go on tape. And then there's always black op military stalking around in uniform, giving us dirty looks, probably involved in the attacks. But again, they did that for America. You know, they staged the attack to make us grow up and get tough for our own good. You know, that's a sick attitude. It's so sick.
Well, Alex, I'm a trained professional, and I will protect myself and my family.
Absolutely. So, specifically, going back to that day, so the average fireman, the average emergency worker, the average police officer, you just heard, oh, 7's coming down. You know, no big deal. 3 buildings, first time in history from fire. It's coming down. Get back.
Well, again, I'm not a structural engineer. We weren't aware of the vernacular. But we were told, and I would say about an hour before. I would say, I think, and again, I'm Jersey City, so our communications, we're directly across the river. It was approximately an hour before that we were told to evacuate.
And specifically, what did you hear?
That a building was coming down. We were Jersey City personnel, so we were just told to evacuate.
So on record, they knew Building 7 was coming down. And what is it like to hear all these or see all these video clips of police, firemen, emergency workers all saying that they were told, you know, higher ups, that the feds were going to bring down Building 7, and then in hindsight, because that proves inside job, to see it all being denied.
Well, it's disheartening. But you have to put it in proper context. I mean, how do we move forward? And I think your show provides the, the apparatus to motivate us. And I think that's what we're doing. I think there's individuals like myself, and a lot of cops are listening right now, too, just so you know.
Well, I want to just beg them to have the courage to stand up and speak out. An investigation in New York or New Jersey by people inside the system could literally bring down the New World Order. If it comes out that it's an inside job, main line, they can't kill all of you, then this will bring down the New World Order. They cannot survive this. And I've risked my life and many others have been killed to bring you this information. So I hope to God you'll have the courage to at least investigate what we're saying. Now specifically, in your own saga, trying to wake up your department, that's one of the reasons you're here today. Break that down. I mean, talk about whatever you want.
Well, what I've attempted to do, and now I haven't done this formally, so I want to be specific with that and be clear with it. I haven't put it on formally on paper, which, I mean, that's how you establish a paper trail as far as making a formal request. I'm walking a fine line here because they could bring charges against me, so I have to be very careful what I say. First of all, we're Jersey City. It's a hotbed of, you know, Middle Eastern people. It's a microcosm of all types of people in Jersey City. We really are a ethnic bouillabaisse here. But we don't have a terrorist task force, which is on to me. And when I try to attempt to speak to people about the issue, to some that my fellow officers recoil from it, and I have no idea why they do that. You know, that, and that's why I was one day, excuse me, I want to ask you advice on how to present the information to them.
Well, I mean, I don't have all the answers, but first off, I would understand that they're in fear. Deep down, they know it's true. They're not stupid, and they want to hold on to their life. It's too scary to admit that there's this big evil power running the government that would do something like this, and they psychologically associate themselves with that wicked force. And so there's a lot of reasons down below the surface in the subconscious why they're doing that. But they need to understand that Gulf of Tonkin was staged, USS Liberty was staged, the NATO option, Operation Ajax. This is all admitted. Huge terror attacks staged. You can give them Northwoods, ABC News, plans to kill U.S. troops, plans to bomb U.S. cities and blame it on foreign enemies. And so first that this has gone on. And then I would just show them the clips of going, okay, why did they report that Building 7 was going to be brought down? And then later say that it was just fire that did it when no steel building had ever done this. And then here's Richard Gage's information. This needs to be looked into. And then I would give them the Keith Olbermann clip talking about Dick Cheney wanting to stage terror attacks against their own ships, the Cy Hirsch report on that, and then say, okay. And then I would also give them the polls showing the majority of Americans believe that there's a 9/11 cover-up.
Alex, I'm sorry, not to interrupt you, but, I mean, as a police officer, you know, you reconcile your mortality pretty much on a daily basis. I don't think it's a fear for their safety. I just believe it's more of that, an emotional fear.
No, I agree. They've done studies. Stay there. We'll come back and talk about this. This is important, but I want to hear what you have to say, not just, you know, myself. It's easier to charge a machine gun nest to go against your peers. They found that in psychological studies. We'll be right back. All right, Detective John Carroll from Jersey City, New Jersey, is our guest. He was a first responder on the day of 9/11 and throughout the next few days working there on the pile. And a lot of his cohorts listening right now there in his department. Look, sir, I mean, you know more about being a police officer than I do and how to deal with it. I would just tell these officers, look at $8.5 trillion stolen in 8 weeks and counting. The people that did this attack aren't going to stop. I mean, and now troops on the streets and all of that. I mean, we have been taken over by foreign corporate interests that are looting us. And, I mean, I guess they can just live in denial and they're going to lose everything they got. Because criminals that'll do something this big aren't going to stop. But, I mean, go ahead, make your points. Make your points of your awakening and where you see all this going.
Well, again, Alex, I'm not a professional orator. I mean, I find myself a fairly articulate person, but...
Well, I'm not a professional orator either, but go ahead.
Well, you sure come off like one. But I think at the end of the day, to try to inspire people to move forward in general, not just police officers, they need to assimilate to what the reality is. And I think it's just at such a core level that the 9/11 issue was just such a, it redefines your existence. And I think that's the wall that I'm bouncing against. Now, for some reason, I could see through it. But I think that police are, you know, we're authoritative. You become that I was never that type of guy to begin with. Excuse me, before I became a cop. But you sort of become that. And I think that insulates you even more so than a citizen. Not a citizen, you know what I mean?
I understand the general public, the civilians.
Yeah, the civilians.
But the bottom line is, historically, police are one of the most abused groups by corrupt systems. And so police need to know, historically, you're not immune. In fact, you're going to get the dirty end of the stick, generally. Did the New World Order care about the cops and firemen when they blocked the treatment for the dust, when they told you the dust wasn't bad?
Well, I went for all the tests, and I'm healthy as a horse.
No, that's good, but it did kill a lot of people.
Yes, it did.
That's confirmed. I mean, Mount Sinai.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh.
And remember, the government tried to deny that for 4 years, but now they have all the CAT scans of thousands. Thousands are dead. So, good thing that didn't happen to you. Did you get a breathing mask pretty quick?
No, I pretty much had a spackle mask on the whole time.
Well, you were smart to have that, brother. That's probably what saved you.
Yeah. Getting back to the overlying point is that what happened here is so overwhelming that for the average human being to wrap their minds around it, That's where it becomes the issue. I think that's the core issue, and you speak to it so eloquently, and Trump. But it's just difficult for me to turn people on.
Well, here's an example. I knew 15 years ago, 13 years ago, when I got on air, that most pork you buy at the store, raw pork, has live worms in it that will eat your brain. Now, I tell people that, and they laugh at me. Now, I play a Fox News clip about how suddenly thousands of people are having their brains eaten by these worms. People finally listen. Who would believe that there's worms eating people's brains and that nobody's trying to stop these pigs from Mexico coming in? You know, I'm not making that up, and I'm not making up that 9/11's an inside job either. So, you know, I don't know what to say to people. There's people right now on my website saying we're making it up about the worms that eat people's brains. So, I mean, I can't do anything other than just tell people that, okay, if you don't want to believe us, that's fine. But the evidence is over. We're going to come back in a long segment, and I want to specifically get into, where this goes in your department, challenging people, you know, the types of responses you get. But keep making your points.
Well, again, what I think collectively what police should do, especially 9/11 survivors, there needs to be a coalition, and that's what I'm going to try to attempt to do, because I don't trust government at all. I understand, but I do trust people, and there's a lot of good people in the government. So what I want to do is move forward and try to establish just a group of people that can wrap their minds around this, and then move forward from there.
Yeah, I would call it police and military for 9/11 truth. I think they already have similar groups. Now, you know, what was it? The daughter of the supposed Flight 77 in New Jersey, they admitted was murdered by arson, by a can of gas in the face in her hallway. So I'm just telling you, be careful, Officer Carroll. I know you're not stupid, but I'm telling you, they will kill you if they think they can shut you down. The fact that you're speaking out now is great. But I would get as many officers as you can now to just call for an investigation, to say, hey, we think there should be an investigation of the dust, the collapse, all of it, and then they can't kill you all. But now is the phase where you're in danger.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
All right, we're back live. Luke Radowski waiting in the wings. Detective John Carroll from Jersey City, New Jersey, joins us, 9/11 first responder, survivor, hero. And we have so many tapes of police, firemen, emergency responders. I want to play one right now from an EMT who was on the site. Just a brief clip, and then we're going to go back to the police officer and others But here is that clip. It's the next video clip on the DVD. Yes, from Truth Rising. Here it is.
As Kevin McPadden, I was a first responder on 9/11, and I'm a prior Air Force medic.
He was there. He was there when Building 7 came down, and he clearly hears a countdown of the building being demolitioned.
On the first day on 9/11, was staged north of Building 7. Amy Goodman was out in the intersection part.
World Trade Center Building 7, your opinion?
I think it needs to be further investigated.
They had half of us separate into search and rescue and half of us into medical assistance. When we saw the firemen pick up and start grabbing their equipment and bustling back and forth, you know, they were getting ready to do something, we started asking questions. And so we had our eyes on this Red Cross representative that was holding a radio. So, you know, usually the person who's holding the radio has answers. Well, what's going on? What's going on? Well, what are the firemen running around for? Like, there's something going on. And next thing you know, there's firemen grabbing all their equipment, and there was a whole bustle and shuffle of firemen going on. He goes over, he talks to the firemen, he comes back with his hand covered over the radio, and he's like, you know, just sit tight, calm down, it's calm down, you know, it's all right. He finally has this face that is like he was heartbroken. He's like, just run for your life.
You hear that?
Keep your eye on that building. It'll be coming down soon.
The building is about to blow up. Move it back.
Rescue workers push people away from the scene.
We are walking back. The building is about to blow up.
He takes his hand off, and you hear 3, 2, 1, and it was boom, 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 boom.
I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse.
Richard Gage is an amazing individual. He studied architecture.
Again, that's from Truth Rising. That's where everybody needs to get the DVD, make copies of it. Get it out to everybody. This is probably the most important 9/11 film out there just because it gets into every aspect of it, including the movement. But, you know, it's not just that witness or all the other firemen or police or emergency workers. It's that we even then have the video of Amy Goodman in the shot he's talking about with he and others milling around in the shot. You can even see him there in the blurred video. And then we talked to Amy Goodman, and she admits she remembers it. And we have the footage of the cops saying, get back, it's coming down. They're going to bring it down. I mean, we don't just have eyewitnesses. We have live CNN and MSNBC news feeds of it happening. Now, again, Detective John Carroll, I mean, what do you call that in a case when the evidence piles up and 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 piles up? And then it's all in our face, and then they tell us, don't even discuss it, don't even look at it. What do you call that?
Well, just a preponderance of evidence. So, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's a two-parter. I mean, yeah, I mean, just an overwhelming open and shut case in your face, hidden in plain view. But, yeah, and then they just cover that up. I mean, it's like an elephant sitting on you in the living room, and people are saying there's not an elephant in here.
Well, oftentimes in law enforcement, see, again, Alex, I have to be very careful of how I address questions because I'm still held to protocol. So I have to, you know, even commenting about, police work is, you know, that would give them.
How would you get in trouble? I mean, you don't lose your First Amendment, do you? You're not even allowed to comment on the 9/11 investigation, or what are you saying?
Well, no, it's just when it comes to. Just police work in general. That's where what I'm saying about 9/11. That's going to bring, from my standpoint, things to a forefront. But when it comes to actual direct police work, I can't really comment. That's where they can get me in trouble. That's where they can do me in.
Oh, where you start stating things as a detective?
Yes.
Specifically in your capacity. Well,
the minute I retire, I'll come on your show for. Yeah, you know, anytime you graciously have me, and I'll speak ad nauseam.
No, sure. yesterday when I got the message relayed from Aaron, I must have misunderstood it. It was that you're basically throwing down the gauntlet to the department. Can you clarify that?
Well, what I want to do, and I it was sort of short notice, and everyone's on vacation right now. What I want to do is basically say, I'm not going to work. Now, I'm a 15-year veteran. I got all the bells and whistles. I don't want to go into my resume, but I'm clean as my mother's floor. So I'm beyond reproach. But we have to force this thing now. This thing has come to a head. And now it's time that good men stand up and do what good men do. And this is what I'm doing.
Well, we were talking before the show, and you were, you know, talking about the fact that you did swear an oath. And that oath is to the people. Like you said, it's not to some shadowy intelligence agency that controls the government.
Absolutely. And I want to speak to all military and police listening right now. And I'm sure there are a lot. We swore an oath, people. This is what you're supposed to be doing. I don't trust government, never did, but I trust people in government. There's enough of us out there that we're not going to let this happen. We're simply not going to let it happen. Now, if I'm threatened with death or whatever, I'm a trained professional. I know how to protect myself. And if anybody's planning on doing anything, you know what? You better send a lot of them. Please reconcile their mortality. I know what I'm doing here. I will take you out.
Well, in a way, that's liberating, isn't it, to go ahead and reconcile it, deal with it, go through it, go past it, kind of go past the point of return. I mean, because I've been not put in the position of a police officer, the danger you're in every day, but I've been physically attacked. I've been death threatened, you know, no doubt. I face a lot of different type of dangers, my name being besmirched, being physically attacked, being audited, things like that. But it really is liberating in a way to just say, I am who I am, and I'm not backing down, and that's just the end of it.
Yes, it is. It's very liberating. But as, you know, as police officers, I think as people in general, I think that's just the human quality. Once you get past that point of fear that you speak to, that's when you do make that quantum leap. And I've stayed quiet too long. It was because of my job that I did. You know, I took my oath seriously. I take my profession seriously. You know, it provides food for my family. But I'm compensated for the privilege of helping people. Imagine that. Imagine being paid to be a hero.
That's great.
Or the possibility of a hero.
Well, it's a sacred office as long as it's controlled by the people, and a good thing. It's too bad this system is corrupt system has been corrupting that and destroying something that, you know, really was honorable. And still can be salvaged. What woke you up, Detective Carroll, first to the fact that things were shady surrounding 9/11?
Well, actually, on 9/11 itself, I mean, I'm not a structural engineer, and that's where Richard Gage comes in, and he can speak to it much more articulately than I can from the structural standpoint. But there was a makeshift, I can speak to this, there was a makeshift morgue on, excuse me, on Liberty Island. That's what, Statue of Liberty right there. And we were expecting 20,000 bodies. It was very hectic that day. I sort of try to forget it, try to subliminally push it down. But my XO at the time, now, I wasn't there. I wasn't present when he heard it. But he was in civilians. He was in the civvies. He was in civilian clothing. So he was taken in and mistakenly taken in as military. Now, I didn't hear this. I wasn't there, but he was taken into a briefing, and they had a satellite overlay of Ground Zero with a bunch of, red dots, and it was UEDs, unexploded devices. Now, that's not hearsay. He told me that, and I won't say his name on air. But it was Army Corps of Engineers, it was all branches of the military. And then there were actually passes. Now, that I saw, they actually had passes, printed passes to get in.
Yeah, they were already ready within hours to control the crime scene because they needed to control it. They needed to make sure that evidence was covered up. I want to go to Luke Radowski here in a few minutes, but I want to keep you on. Specifically, when you first called in yesterday
you were, and we ran out of time, you were talking about, you know, other issues, other instances. You mentioned 93. You mentioned other things that had happened.
Well, there's the blind sheik. See, again, I'm treading on grounds here, but the blind sheik.
Sheikh Abd al-Rahman out of the New Jersey pizza place.
Yeah, right above. It was above the police place. That's in General Square. There is all kinds of intel that we simply don't have access to. And now we're the Jersey City Police Department. We don't have a terrorist task force? You know, if it is a so-called hotbed of terrorist activity, how are we not involved?
Well, you know about Ahmad Salam. The FBI hires him. They have him cook the bomb, train the driver.
Yes.
You know, this is real Muslim terrorists, but they literally create the group, point it at the Trade Center, tell them to park it up against the pillar. Thank God they didn't. That's on record because Ahmad Salam figured out they were setting him up because he wasn't really a Muslim extremist. He had been hired to do this by the FBI. He recorded them, so they had to pay him $1.3 million. But, I mean, look, it's been in the New York papers, the New Jersey papers, the Pennsylvania papers that the firefighters and police found 3 of the 4 boxes. That's actually come out in congressional testimony, and the FBI seized them. Why grab the flight recorders? What are they covering up?
We know the way it works now is it really is like TV. I mean, it really is like the movies. The way they portray the relationship between local police and FBI. You know, when the Fed comes on the scene and you know the local cop just flips them off, and that's pretty much the way it is. We're just glorified security guards. So we don't have access to this.
Well, the way it's supposed to work, unless it was a federal marshal with a directive from the president or the Congress. They're not supposed to be involved. You see, everything is ass backwards. Excuse that term, but that's what it is.
Well,
it's all backwards. The states are supposed to be sovereign, and they're supposed to kiss your boots, not the other way around.
Yeah, but you know what? To take that posture, what you want to do is, I mean, I think we just need more access. Now,
but that's not going to happen as long as we have feds running things. Look, the feds covered up for Madoff. While he stole not a 50, but $100 billion.
Mm.
Okay, and now they're covering for him again. So, I mean, it's just the feds are foreign. It's a foreign bank has hijacked America. It's a corporate takeover. Any other key points concerning 9/11 or anything else about your XO, your commander, going in there and into that military briefing, out there at the makeshift morgue, out there at the Statue of Liberty? And anything else he saw in those overlays? Any other little tidbits that are important for people out there?
No, it was basically an overlay map, satellite overlay. And again, I didn't see this. This is a corner of my XO. And that the Army Corps had sealed it off. Now, that was later on that night. That was actually after Plaza 7 fell. So I got evacuated from Battery Park. So we went directly from Battery Park to Liberty Island. Now, I just sort of like, we just sort of like brushed, we brushed each other as he went in. And then when he came out, he had this like befuddled look on his face. And I asked him, I said, what's going on? And actually my badge number was 9/11 on 9/11. And he looked at my badge number and he goes, your badge number is 9/11. I remember he was the first individual to say that to me.
That's amazing. Well, I know you had Richard Gage into town to speak to folks. Did that have an effect on your colleagues?
No. I think it's a befuddlement. I think people just can't wrap their minds around it. And tell you the truth, you know what they're most likely going to do? Now, I'm a 15-year vet. They're going to wind up, sending me for a psych. I'm staying as the next guy. But, I know what I'm up against here. I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I guess if you show them all the CNN clips of them saying they blew the building up, I guess that's all them need psych evaluations as
well.
Yeah,
we all need psych. Yeah, we're all a bunch of testosterone-driven, knuckleheads that...
Well, as more of you stand up and speak out, we commend your courage. We're not going to be able to get away with this. The establishment wouldn't be attacking us with all these TV shows and programs if it wasn't happening. Let's bring up Luke Radowski. Stay there, Detective Carroll. Luke, Now We Are Change. He's the founder of We Are Change, wearechange.org, 100-plus chapters all over the world, 9/11 Truth and other activism against the globalist. Now you guys, Luke, have the FBI going around asking questions about you. We know you've got infiltrators trying to stir stuff up. Things are getting serious. Tell us the latest chapter, Luke.
You mean the new chapter that we have in our organization?
No, the new chapter in harassment.
Well, just 2 weeks ago, we had Jesse Ventura and many 9/11 family members and rescue workers down at Ground Zero. We're out there every Saturday giving out free DVDs and free flyers to the public out there about the truth behind 9/11. And 2 weeks ago, we had Jesse Ventura. And then last week, we had one of our supporters. We have many supporters at the Ground Zero community that support us and are huge fans of ours but are not members. And one of the people that, you know, just works down at Ground Zero, he wished not to be disclosed, said he was questioned by the FBI, people with FBI badges, about our group. And he just came to us last week. This is the week before we had Jesse Ventura, family members, rescue workers down at Ground Zero. And, you know, that's why they came down there, because we're having a huge effect at Ground Zero.
You know, I haven't been keeping touch with Jesse or you guys. I've been so busy on other things, but I didn't know Ventura was up in New York. I wish you guys would let me know about that. I'd have come in.
Jesse Ventura was there for only a little bit. He was shooting a pilot for his series that he's working on.
Yeah, I knew he was going back to New York for that. Yeah.
Yeah, and he stopped by Ground Zero. We had a lot of family members, a lot of rescue workers. It was an amazing day 2 weeks ago at Ground Zero. It was
How long was he at Ground Zero?
What happened?
How long was he at Ground Zero?
He's only there for, you know, about around an hour or so. Not that long at all.
I need to give him a call. He emailed me the other day. I need to give him a call because I'm working with him on that. We'll see where that TV program goes. Luke, what do you think of Detective John Carroll and what he has to say?
I mean, it's a beautiful thing. We definitely need more police officers and more people in the military on our side. We get a lot of support, again, in the community at Ground Zero from a lot of people. And it's sad seeing these people being questioned and harassed by the FBI about our organization. But again, we have nothing to hide. We're a peaceful organization. We want to work with the police, with the military, against the elite, against the New World Order that enslave us.
Yeah, stay there. Stay there. Fighting for the interest of the United States against the New World Order. We're the true patriots.
Call my name out your window when I'm leaving. I won't even turn my head. Don't send your kin folks to give me no talking. I'll be gone, like I said.
Yeah, it was lonely.
You'd say the same.
Years before 9/11, making films about government-sponsored terrorism.
Lay there in your bed,
like America Destroyed by Design in 97. Police State 2000, and other documentaries. And then months before 9/11, saying, call the White House, tell them don't blow up the World Trade Center. First and only time I've said call the White House and tell them don't blow up the buildings. Because I could see all the preparation on the news, the preparation of the public mind, and that's on record. You know, that aired many times on Access TV that I aired July 25th live, and I turned the tape in that day, and it aired a few times. It aired on the morning of 9/11 again, and we got a bunch of death threats. People thought I was on there on the day saying it was an inside job when it was 2 months old. But Jimmy Vaughn, my good friend, who I didn't even know at the time, he saw me live say call the White House. He was on the fence about me. And then 2 months later, he saw the attack on the World Trade Centers, and he said, oh, my God, this stuff is really accurate. So, you know, I'm on record saying that, and that's what studying these people can do for you. You can really understand where they're going to strike next, their basic psychology, their criminology. I want to hold Luke and Detective John Carroll over 5 minutes of the next segment. Then we have the author of Target Patton. It's now come out that what we already knew was true. The CIA with the NKVD, what was OSS at the time, with the NKVD killed George S. Patton because he didn't want to let the Russians keep 12,000 U.S. soldiers that had been captured by the Nazis. The Russians took over those camps and said, we want them for slave labor and for intel. And Patton said, hell no, I'm going public. And they said, die, U.S. government, die, sucker. Troops don't mean jack squat to us. That's now mainstream news. So for the cops out there that can't believe this, can't get it through their heads, or the public can't get it through their heads, they killed Patton over this stuff. They think of you as dog meat. Any comments on the dust, on Patton, just on any of this historically, Detective Carroll and then Luke?
Well, I believe they're capable of doing pretty much anything. So I don't know enough about the topic. I would have to research it, but I take you at your word. Moment of brevity, a little lighthearted thing. I really appreciated you when you were talking to Richard Gage, you were interviewing, I should say, Richard Gage, and he was speaking about the imposing hit piece that's going to be coming.
Oh yeah,
I like the way you presented it. It was almost like buckle up, pal, wake up to reality. Yeah, Rich is a good man, but he's a good man, great man, very articulate. I mean, accomplished, but there is a very nuanced naivete, and just the way you just don't you know how this business works, pal? Buckle up.
Yeah, no, he's like Beaver. And the other guys like Eddie Haskell, and I don't say that just as my opinion. They have a hit piece specialist who makes films only attacking the alternative media JFK researchers. So he is a specialist. Luke Radowski, your comments on the media and all these hit pieces coming out against us.
Well, again, they don't care. They don't care about the family members. They don't care about the rescue workers. They don't care about the police officers. It's about us getting the information out there and educating the people.
Absolutely. Stay there, Luke Radowski, and, of course, John Carroll. The fourth hour is straight ahead. We're live at PrisonPlanet.tv. All right, final segment with our two guests. Anything else you want to add, Detective Carroll, or your email, your contact points for other police, other peace officers in the New Jersey, New York, surrounding area that want to join with you to form, I guess, police and military against the 9/11 cover-up or for a 9/11 investigation or whatever you want to call it? You want to give out a contact point?
You can email me at jmkj918@comcast.net.
And, again, give that email out again slowly for folks, please, sir.
jmkj918@comcast.net.
All right. Come out to Ground Zero with Luke and the guys and the gals. I mean, I know you've been having some events of your own, but let's all join forces here.
Oh, absolutely. And just leaving, I just want to be very specific about this because I am coming out. I am trained very well. I know exactly what I'm doing here. So I'm going to be very specific. I'm calling on all angels. That means I'm calling to all the patriots that are listening, especially military and police. This is our responsibility. This is what we're doing. Everybody, you're either going to be a hero or you're not. This is what we're trained to do. Wake up. Don't be a dope. Get a mitt. Get in the game. Because I think it's going to get worse from here.
God bless you. Absolutely. Don't leave. I want to have Luke say hi to you here as well. Luke, I hope you guys get in touch with each other, and I hope more people come out to Ground Zero. A recap here, where We Are Change is going right now.
Right now, we're making a new film. Right now, we're working very hard. We're out there every Saturday. We're out there having meetings every Friday. We're doing excellent work. There's a lot of amazing, good people behind us, a lot of great police officers. I want to salute the detective. Thank him so much from the bottom of my heart. There's a lot of good cops out there, but we're also going through a lot of harassment by a lot of bad cops out there. Recently, we went out to confront Henry Paulson, where I was confronted by police officers trying to arrest me for no reason. I have the video of the police officer basically stopping me, harassing me, screaming at me for no reason at all for standing on the street corner where Henry Paulson was supposed to be walking by.
Well, he's our God. He's stolen $8.5 trillion. We have to love the foreign banker.
Exactly. And the Secret Service even admitted when we ran up to Paulson and we asked him, how come you threatened martial law? How come you threatened Congress and the Senate with martial law? He grabbed the camera, and when Paulson got in his car, he was like, yeah, we were watching you all day. And then we heard everything that they were talking about with other people inside the event that they overheard the Secret Service guys talking about us.
Saying, well, Luke, have you gotten this Paulson footage up on the web yet?
Not yet. We're working on it. We're working on the film right
now.
Well,
did you get all the videos I just mailed you?
I did not get anything yet.
Okay, well, I know I've seen Rob running around here dubbing videos for you guys to use for weeks, so I don't know what's going on. We just moved. It's quite a mess. But
yet again, there's a lot of good police officers that need to educate all the other police officers because the level of harassment is really escalating with FBI officials talking to our supporters down at Ground Zero that are not even a part of our group, that are just there working, supporting us. So we need to educate as many people as we can.
Well, that's because the system is threatened, and folks can find out more at wearechange.org. And you got a lot of new chapters, right, Luke?
Yeah, we have over 77 chapters all around the world. Our news chapter is in Hawaii. We're working every day all around the world, being the change that we want to see in this world. And nothing can stop us. Nothing can stop our spirit, our soul, in finding out what's really happened on 9/11 and fighting the justice. We have great people like Major Mike McCormick, firefighters like John Schroeder, family members, you know, Manny Badillo, Bob McLevane, being out there at Ground Zero with us, talking to regular people that don't know what's going on.
All right. Luke, we're going to talk to you for a full hour in the near future. Let me say bye to you when we end this break. And let me say goodbye to Detective John Carroll right now. John, we'll be watching your back. Watch ours. Thanks for coming on with us. Thanks for your courage.
Thanks, buddy.
You join publicly a lot of other great people. They're standing up and fighting for truth, including former presidents of other countries, former defense ministers, you name it.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this weekend I was blown away to see this headline. It then made headlines all across the world. London Telegraph. General George S. Patton was assassinated to silence his criticism of Allied leaders' claims. New book. And in this article, it goes through the evidence that I read little blurbs in other books, other espionage books, other World War II guests that we interviewed, letters from Patton home to family and others, his promise to have parades and go to Congress. And demand that thousands of U.S. soldiers captured by Nazis that were then, when the Russians on the Eastern Front came into Germany and Poland, they captured these U.S. servicemen, Army airmen, Army Marines, and were going to use them as slave labor. The number's as high as 12,000. He got very upset about that, very patriotic, extremely patriotic, but actually did, you know, have allegiance to his troops. He expected a lot of them, but... And I don't claim to be, I'm some expert historian on Patton, but most people don't even read about World War II. I've read a few books about Patton, probably read about more than 60 books total about World War II because it's such a pivotal sea change in world society. But when I read this, this is what experts, you know, that we've had on over the years said about how they favorite OSS/CIA way to kill somebody. They rammed his car with a truck, jumped up, shot him with a low-velocity bullet in the throat, didn't kill him. So then they sent in NKVD to kill him. And we knew he was saying that the Russians were a threat. That, you know, that same thing MacArthur got relieved from when the Chinese poured across the Yalu River there in Korea. He wanted to use nukes. And then they went to the UN and stopped the whole deal because, of course, MacArthur wasn't at that grid level, which now totally declassified. That actually the United States put the Soviets, in with money in 1917, along with the Bank of England. And, of course, in 1949, now completely declassified, even on the History Channel, the CIA actually went with Mao Zedong against Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists. So that was part of a larger strategic plan to create a false bipolar world. And so the but I'm getting off the issue here, and I appreciate our guest joining us. But this is an example of General George S. Patton, who was upset about a lot of things, being murdered. And the London Telegraph's gone over the evidence and says they believe it's conclusive. The author talked to the famous OSS spy and assassin before he died. He also has his diary and a lot of other eyewitness reports and material. And it fits in with it's kind of like Gulf of Tonkin. You know, we always knew that was staged, but now it's declassified. CIA admits it. Well, same thing here. So we have the expert on with us for the next 15 minutes, and I appreciate Robert K. Wilcox, author of Target Patton. And this is a book I will be getting, and I will be reading it. In fact, we have an online bookstore at InfoWars.com. Maybe I should call a publisher and buy a few hundred and sell them on the site, because this is something people need to know. Again, thank you so much for coming on the show with us, Mr. Wilcox.
Glad to be with you, Alex.
Tell us about yourself, how you got into this as a historian, and then break down what really happened to Patton.
Well, I'm a writer, and I'm always looking for good stories. And my cousin is he owns a detective agency, and we were working out one day, and he just blurts out that he knew that Patton had been killed because he talked to the guy who had a lot of information about it. Now, I was like most people; I thought that Patton had been had died from a normal accident, a car accident, and that's what I told him. He said, "Oh no, no," he said, "I can put you in touch with the guy. He'll tell you about it." Well, he didn't say he'd tell me about it, but anyway, he can put me in touch with the guy. And I then, as you mentioned earlier, went and talked to Douglas Bezzata, who was in fact an OSS assassin. Now, I want to preface this by saying that Bezzata had lived a long life as a clandestine. He had stayed on after World War II. He had been one of the first Jedbirds. This was the beginning of our special forces, and had jumped in to behind Nazi lines in conjunction with D-Day, and had organized the Maquis. Sterling guy, and one of the things I did was go right into the National Archives and found his records. Luckily, they had been finally declassified. And this guy had won as many medals as anybody. He was just a terrific, terrific guy. But he had spent a long time as a clandestine and would have never talked to me in a million years, I'm sure. But he had had a stroke, and he also had been promised that he would be given a big job in the CIA. And when he came back, of course, they didn't know who he was. There were never any records of anything like here. He had to fight to get all of his VA benefits for being stabbed, shot, all these other things, and he became very, very mad about it all. And so,
Howard Hunt went public. He knows they killed his wife, blew her up, and you know he did a deathbed confession about running the op to kill Kennedy. But side issue, please continue.
Yeah, well, so that's very true. So all these things conversed, and I got him when he was sort of his guard was down, and. And he just began to tell me about it. And while I did not think that he had been involved, I thought he just knew, he then told me that he had been given an order by the head of the OSS, Wild Bill Donovan, to kill Patton. And this, by the way, was the result of a long plot, which was we could call Stop Patton. And this is bona fide. And when you read in Target Patton, my book, you'll see that way, way back in 44 and 43, they began to not like Patton. He had tremendous jealousy because he was so good. And then
he was anti-communist. He wasn't a globalist. He was America. I mean, he had this long pedigree back to, you know, closely related to George Washington and then all the famous Confederate, some of the famous Confederate generals. So he had this incredible pedigree that they didn't have. And we know that Eisenhower was very, very jealous of him because he was just a desk clerk. And he wasn't playing ball with Uncle Joe Stalin. But the key here is this assassin, and that's what the Telegraph researched your book, and they say, yeah, this guy hung out with the royal family. This guy was like an undercover movie star with the elite, this commando. So, you know, he is who he says he was, and you have the government records.
Very much so. And I became very impressed with him, not because of basically what he told me, but by going in and researching him, everything he told me was true. So when we get to this point, you know, I've got to give him the benefit of the doubt when he told me about this. But Anyway, Patton, as you've so ably described, you know, he wanted to go to war with the Russians right then. He was very prescient. He saw what was going on. There are so many motives.
That's the word for Patton. He was prescient.
Absolutely.
That's the key to a good general. Go ahead.
And he was fighting, basically, an administration which started with FDR, and then by the time this happened, with Truman, who was just following FDR's, that loved the Russians. They wanted to do everything they could. FDR called Stalin Uncle Joe, and they were so blinded, or worse, because Stalin just wanted, as you know, to take over the Eastern Europe and use it as a buffer, and that's what he got. And Patton was just nuts over this. And they thought he was nuts. He was so mad because he said,
yeah, the looting of the jewels of the Western world as gulag slaves. And of course, they mention a line of it. I haven't read your book yet. A line about U.S. prisoners. I mean, I haven't read your book yet. Is it in there about the 11,000?
It is in there. That was another thing that Patton was livid over. You know, once they took over those countries, whoever was in there, including American soldiers, they were just chucked off to the gulag, and that is still an untold story. I believe you can find books about it now.
Yeah,
but
some numbers say 22,000, but confirmed right at 12,000 U.S. soldiers who were in German camps. The Russians take them over, and then our government just said, screw our troops, and Patton's like, screw our troops. So here he is getting in trouble for slapping cowards around, you know, to keep morale up. Because this guy's sniveling and crying, but again, using that as PR to make him look bad. But meanwhile, he actually really cared about the troops.
Oh, he cared terribly about them, and it was worse than even what you've said. I mean, FDR squelched and told people that they could not talk. This is FDR himself. You know the famous Katyn massacre.
Yes.
Where the Russians massacred most of the Polish leadership so they could take over the country and then blamed it on the Nazis. Well, the Russians have now admitted this in the last few years, what had really happened, that it was the Russians.
Yeah, they've now dug up the bodies, and there's even Russian bayonets and bullets in them.
Exactly. Well, there's no question because the Russians have admitted it now. They've, you know, sort of a cleanse their soul type of thing, that it was us. But at that time, FDR would not allow the records that he had commissioned. He had an investigation to be made public because it made the Russians look bad.
He was such a dirtbag. And from what I've read, I haven't read your book yet, the last straw, though, was the 12,000 troops going to death camps.
Well, I can't confirm that, but that is the figure that I've heard, too. And I know that there were Americans that were taken away.
Well, how dare Patton not want to send U.S. troops to Russian camps for no reason? He deserved to die. He wasn't a good American. And, of course, that's what Wild Bill said. He said, he's a great patriot, but I need you to kill him.
Yeah, that was. This is the culmination of a series of meetings that Bezzotta said he had, which started with the stop Patton. And it's a historical fact. We know that when Patton, after he'd roared through France, he was poised in 1944 in September to go into Germany. He would have ended that war in a month or two, and imagine all the American lives that would have been saved. Well, they stopped him because Eisenhower, who was a diplomat, not a fighter, not
a coward.
He wanted the British to the bridge too far, Montgomery. And he wanted Montgomery to do this, so they stopped Patton at the German border, and they took his gas. This is a matter of historical record.
Yeah, that's even in the Battle of the Bulge movie. And, of course, that's kind of the official spin. They really wanted the Soviets to get half the country.
Well, and what happened afterwards?
I mean, Germany, half of Germany. Go ahead.
Yeah, because Patton couldn't go in there, he had to go and stop the same Germans who then were able to regroup and hit us at the Battle of the Bulge, which was our worst defeat. We lost more guys there than we did at D-Day.
Well, riveting. Stay there, sir. We're going to come right back to you and let you go through the book play by play here. I know I'm interrupting a lot. This is just such amazing history. Target Patton is the book. Google it. You can buy it at Amazon.com. Stay with us. All right, this is a short segment. We've got a long one coming up, so I want to hurry right back to our guest, Robert K. Wilcox. Wilcox, author of Target Patton. That's right, he interviewed the Special Forces OSS assassin. All right, let's go through with the start of Stop Patton. Discredit him, attack him, don't let him race too fast because we got to let the Soviets divide this in half. We got to deal with them. Kind of like the Nazis divided Poland previously in 1939. Continue.
Well, that stop patent order came out early, and you know, and it's a combination. He was just a guy who spoke his mind. He was too good for his own britches, so to speak. He was better than anybody else, and he proved it. He just roared through France, and so they stopped him right there. And what happened was the Germans, who will tell you themselves that they were in disarray and would have been defeated, they then were able to regroup.
Because he was running a blitzkrieg similar to what the Desert Fox would do, but by holding them back, that gave them time. Go ahead.
He traveled and took more ground than any commander ever in the history of the world at that time. His tanks were rolling, you know, 400 or 500 miles in 3 or 4 days. Well, not 3 or 4 days, but maybe in a week. And it was just amazing. And the Germans were in disarray. He had pushed them out of France. They didn't know what to do. They would have been beaten. So
it was a rout.
It was a rout big time. And he couldn't believe that suddenly they're stopping him and they're giving the whole war to Montgomery, his arch rival. And Montgomery blew it again, which he had done so many times. And the worse, the Germans were able to mount this get back together and mount a battle a Battle of the Bulge, which almost kicked us out of France. But if it hadn't, but there was Patton right there, and Eisenhower, who had set this all up. Just, you know, he called his generals together and said, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? They didn't know what to do, but Patton said, I know what to do. I'd already planned for it. And he turned this huge Third Army all the way up and stopped the Battle of the Bulge and beat the Germans there, and then was sent back into Germany. And the worst thing that ever happened to him, the day he cried, literally, was when he could not go to Berlin. But the Allies, our sides, decided to let the Russians come in, as was all planned by Stalin. He had engineered all this. And they took Berlin and the rest of Eastern Europe. And Patton had to sit on the sidelines. So that is probably, in my opinion, the biggest reason that if he was killed. And understand, it is a mystery still to me. But I believe that I could go to a grand jury and get an indictment based on what we now know. whether or not it would go to a conviction, we'd have to let that play out. But there's a lot more evidence here, and when you're ready, I'll just start it off.
Yeah, let's go over what happened. You know, the failed assassination attempt that wounded him, and then the NKVD finishing the job.
Yeah, as I said, when I first heard about this, I like most people, thought that he had just died in a normal accident. But then I studied the accident, and it is really, really mysterious. It's the last day before Patton is to leave. There have already been 3 or 4 very, very suspicious attempts on his life, in my opinion, which you'll read. And then here's the last day. He's decided to leave the Army because they have strings on him so that he can go home, and he's going to fight against the Russians, which, of course, is anathema to the administration. And he's also going to tell the secrets of how the war had been badly managed and how so many Americans died when they shouldn't have, how he could have gone on and taken Berlin. So he's on this lonely road outside of Mannheim, Germany. It's December 9th, 1945, probably 60 years ago. And it's just a lonely road, and there's this army truck that's been waiting for him. They stop at a railroad track, and then they start up. So they're not going very fast. And the driver, there's 2 other people in the car with Patton. Another general, who is his aide, is on the left side. Patton's on the right side in the back seat. They're in a Cadillac, which is a limousine. It's a big thing. It's got a lot of leg room. And there's a driver there. And this driver notices this truck, which starts up when they start up after the railroad track, and it just comes up slowly, almost abreast, and then suddenly, without signaling, turns in front of Patton's car. Patton's driver tries to turn a little to the left. They hit on the right-hand side. It's really a fender bender, but Patton ends up with a broken neck, a tremendous cut on his face, and the other 2 guys don't even move. Now, this is strange. Why did this happen? How could they have a smash and
two guys in the car don't get scratched.
Stay there. By the way, in declassified admitted MI6 and CIA assassinations, these staged auto accidents are their favorite. They will kill you, put you in a car, and then smash a truck into it, or they will smash a truck in it, then kill you. That's how they killed Diana. So a favorite way to kill. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end.
All right, Robert K. Wilcox, author of Target Patents, our guest. Look, what we know is this. It's in mainline history that there were at least 12,000, right at 12,000. Some estimates are above 22,000. Let's just say 12,000 U.S. troops captured in Poland, captured in eastern Germany and other areas, captured out in the Caucasus, captured in Serbia. What's Serbia today? I mean, these a lot of these highly decorated special forces and people. And what did they get for that? Ah, Stalin, we love you. We love what you're doing. Our bankers love you. They love your New World Order. We're going to just let you keep those guys. How's that sound? A little present. We'll never see their families again. You'll work them to death, torture them to get all our secrets. That's okay because we love you. And Patton was hopping mad about that, and he died. Now, so he's in the car, fender bender, but in that second of the jolt, that's a Secret Service favorite. They'll have their patsy just shoot a .22 in the air, and then they grab the president and pump the round in him up against him. But side issue, they love distractions. They love sleight of hand. That's how they killed Yitzhak Rabin. They shot him in the car on the way to the hospital, and we've interviewed the folks from the hospital, the coroner, the doctors, everybody. But let's continue with, okay, so this truck pulls in front. They have a small fender bender with his Cadillac. What happened next?
Well, everybody speculated when the crash ends. Patton is laying on the general next to him, and he's got a bloody face, and he's got a broken neck. The other guys are not even fazed. And to jump ahead a little bit, Douglas Pezzata, the OSS assassin, said that he shot through the window a special air-blown type. Gun that was specially made, and he's behind a bunch of old wrecks and so on, and they actually engineered away this truck that turned without signaling, set up a firing lane for Bazzata, and he shot what amounted to a bolt that would not enter the body but would break the neck, and that's what pushed Patton right across this guy. But nobody saw In the car, what happened? The general who was next to him was looking out the left-hand window. Patton is looking out the right-hand window, and the driver's forward. And the last thing Patton says, according to a memoir which I found, is that, look at that, which makes you wonder, what's he saying? Look at what? Look at what? At a gun pointed at him? At a guy shooting at him or what? Then, bam, the crash, as you said in that instant, boom, there's the crash. And then he's laying on top of the general. Well, the general and the driver all speculated without seeing that Patton had flown through the air in the car and had hit his head on a post that's in between the driver.
By the way, that's what they said Benazir Bhutto died from. Then they released the video of her being machine gunned and the bullets going. They said she hit her head. So that's it. I hope nobody shoots me and I'm on TV being shot with bullets, you know, like Scarface, and they go, "Oh, look, he hit his head."
Well, that's so true. And this, as you said, this is the major number one way to kill people, because an accident always looks like an accident. And even this bolt that he says he hit Patton with in the face, it goes into the wreckage, and then nobody thinks anything of it. It's not a bullet. It didn't enter his body. And this kind of thing. So
it's so heavy, a big bolt, it hits you and then snaps the neck. It's
that's right.
Concussion weapon.
Well, that's what Bezzata said. You know, I've never done it, but that's and I have to take him at his word. You know, this is part of the mystery of all this. But anyway, so the speculation was that he had somehow hit something and broken his neck that way. Well, I can tell you, I had an accident investigator look at this scene, and because of the way that the car turned just before the hit, Patton would never have flown through the air the 4 feet in the back of the car strictly longitudinally. The direction of the car when it hit would have made him hit just the window that he was looking at. So that is false anyway. But this is the story that has always gone down. And all the historians just picked it up. You know, they write their great books about Patton's life. When it comes down to how he died, do they want to spend another 2 years to investigate it like I did? No, and they didn't.
Well, what about the media, though? I mean, I haven't seen the film in decades, but don't they have a horse cart killing him?
Well, now, this is, I mentioned earlier, there were 3 or 4 instances that I think were attempts to kill him earlier, and that is one of them. In that famous film, Patton, at the end, there's a cart, and this did happen. He was in a Jeep, and a cart comes out of an alley that he's driving by, and it has a scythe on it. That's a long stick with a knife on it. They use it to cut wheat with. And this scythe just about cuts his head off, but it misses him. That's one of 3 attempts before what I'm talking about.
Let's briefly go over the other attempts.
Okay, the earliest was another type Jeep accident where he is just hit in a car. He's in a Jeep, and he is injured a little bit. And this happened about 3 months before what I'm talking about. But the most sensational one, and the one which is really fishy, is that right at the end of the war, Patton is flying in his Piper Cub, and he's at a very low altitude. And all of a sudden, 5 Spitfires, which are supposedly Polish, and remember, the Russians have taken over Poland at this time, 5 Polish Spitfires see him, and 4 of them circle, while one of them goes down and starts shooting at Patton's Piper Cub. Thank God the pilot of the Piper Cub is so good, he's able to get so low and into the hills that the Spitfire crashes. And this is all in Patton's diaries, and they are livid. What's going on here? Well, that was, in my opinion, covered up by saying, oh, it was a mistake. He was a young guy, and he didn't realize it wasn't a Nazi airplane. Well, this is a little Piper Cub. You're not going to think this is a Nazi airplane. And why are these 4 other guys circling up there, sort of like watching? You know, they're the signal guys. So anyway, this ends in the death of the Spitfire pilot, and they didn't shoot him down. And I think that those 3 incidences were moving up.
And so was that Soviets in the captured Polish-German Spitfires?
You never know. There are no records. And this is a big part of the evidence here. Do you know that I've looked everywhere, and there are no records on the accident that I've described, on the Polish Spitfire? It's all gone. And I'm not talking about 2 or 3 reports on the accident, this mysterious accident that Patton had. I'm talking about at least 5, including an investigation, and possibly 8. And they are all gone.
Now, we know that he's, and of course, cover-up is evidence of the crime, generally.
It is a cover-up. There's no question about that.
So we have the motive. Patton's already saying he's going to go back and speak out against the Soviets. He's going to go back and tell Congress, kind of like we saw MacArthur do later.
And tell secrets.
Yeah. He's going to tell secrets. He knows they're helping the Soviets. He knows they took 12,000 U.S. troops. You know, he's going to blow the whistle. He's going to destroy the future presidential chances of Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Absolutely.
That can't be allowed, and the Soviets don't like him. You know, they want America to go quietly into the night and go along with Uncle Joe, who'd already killed 40-something million people by that time. Let's go through what they cover in the London Telegraph and then, you know, what's in your book, Target Patton, about, you know, the collusion. So, but it doesn't kill him. He's alive in the hospital. What comes next?
He goes to the hospital, and he's going to die. Everybody thinks he's going to die. I mean, this is a bad thing. He's can't move from the neck down. But he's a tough guy, and he rallies. And within a week and a half, he's doing so well. There are twitches in his fingers and his legs. And they're going to move him. They're going to fly him back to Boston, which is no easy trip at that time, which shows you how well he had become. And suddenly he has a downturn, and within 14 hours he's dead. And Bezzotta says that it was the NKVD that went in there and used a poison on him. The cause of death was embolism, which is a sort of a blood clot going through your brain.
A stroke.
But there's no autopsy done on Patton, so we don't really know what happened to him. And recently, one of the family members of the Pattons was actually approached by a Russian who said, I want to tell you some information. And putting it all together, and to be real succinct about it, I think that they used a poison that mimics this, and they can do that. And they were doing, both the OSS and the NKVD had labs where they made these kinds of poisons, which would mimic a natural cause of death.
Now, the NKVD was the internal apparatus for keeping control of the Soviet Union, and it was being brought into Western Europe at that time. And specifically, let's get into that. While Bill Donovan then made a deal, go specifically through what the assassin told you about this, and then continue.
Well, not many people know that the OSS and the NKVD were in collusion. They, early on in the war, Donovan flew to Russia and proposed that the two of them work together, which was a good idea at that time. I mean, the Russians were fighting the Nazis, and, Donovan is a very enigmatic man, perhaps the most enigmatic of all in World War II. And he was a guy who would take a chance. He'd make a deal with the devil.
He's the guy that flew bombers off an aircraft carrier to bomb Tokyo.
Yeah, I think he's probably his idea. I'm not certain about that. But anyway, he went there and he made a deal with the NKVD. Now, let me say that the NKVD just played him for a fool, because they already had so many spies in America, right up to the White House. We were inundated with in the State Department, and so McCarthy, whatever his methods were, he didn't know the half of it. And
when McCarthy was useful to set up a police state when he was just going after little pinkos, when he found out that the army was basically running Russia, and if you really study this, sounds like you're pretty educated, that communism was only a fake system of the Anglo-American empire, as the head of Georgetown political science, Carol Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, said. They wanted to work with fascist and communist, as the Milner Group in England said about 100 years ago, 98 years ago, that they wanted to work with tyrannical regimes. And so, bottom line, that's why the U.S. and England put Mao in, put Lenin in, put all these people in, was, kind of these fake counter-revolutions that look like they're for the people, but they really aren't. And so, as long as he was saying it was a communist threat from Russia to take over America, that was fine, when really that's butt backwards. It was the globalists that we know of today who were actually finger-puppeting the Soviets. Go ahead.
Well, Alex, you're really ahead of me on that one. You know an awful lot about that. But what I do know is that Venona, which was our breaking of the Russian codes during World War II, and which has been kept secret until just recently, now shows us that there were many, many, many hundreds of spies in our government apparatus, Russian spies, who were telling Stalin daily what was going on. So going back to the OSS collusion with the NKVD, they didn't really need it, but they went ahead with it because it served their purposes, and they played Donovan like a marionette.
Do you see how the Western overarching Anglo-American empire used its Soviet base as a system to send in spies that were untraceable, with even the NKVD, KGB spies, in the case of the U.S., not even knowing they were under the control of the larger system?
Well, that certainly could be true. I just don't know any more than what I've done here.
Well, when McCarthy found out about it, that's when they blew him away.
Well,
that's when they politically shut him down.
There are probably 20 books here, to detail all of this. But all I can really talk about is Patton.
and what happened to him. And, you know, we haven't spoken about one thing, and that is that on the NKVD side, I tracked down an American agent who was with Patton's armies. He was a CIC agent, a counterintelligence agency. His job was to find these kinds of plots. And he was dealing with the Russians. And he found out that Stalin had put Patton on a death list, a hit list. And so he went back and he tried to stop this. And he had to deal with Wild Bill Donovan. This is all written in this man's book. I did not speak to him. He died. But I found his book, which was really written for his children. They gave it to me, and it is an amazing, amazing document. And it talks all about this. And through three different sources at three different times, this agent who had been with Patton and was in Germany at that time, as was Bezzada at the time of Patton's death, he was run out by Donovan under threat of his life, and he had to live here that way for many years. He eventually came out of that and became a Republican staffer type, and he worked for Reagan and some others. Both Bezzada and this other agent, Stephen Skubic, are two great, great witnesses in this. They really have a lot of credibility, and so on that side, on the Russian side, Skubic found out that they had this plan, that they were working with the OSS to kill Patton, tried to stop it, and was run out of Germany under threat of his life.
Just unbelievably amazing. And when you were talking to the assassin, you know, why was he telling you he was going public about this?
Well, that's a great question. He never would have gone public. But as he came back, as I mentioned earlier, he'd been promised a great job with the CIA. Nobody knew him. He had to fight for his benefits.
So they screwed him.
They screwed him royally. And he began to see things that he had always kept quiet be put out in books. And so he became really, really disenchanted with the whole situation. And so he actually did, in 1979, make a statement to the Spotlight, which was a newspaper which is no longer around. It was in
it's now American Free Press. Yeah.
Yes, and in that statement, he said, "I know who killed Patton because I was given money to do so. It wasn't me, but I know who did it." And this was his first act of kind of, I'm tired of this, you know. I'm not going to sit on this any longer. Because his father, by the way, was a Presbyterian minister of great reputation in New Jersey, and he had a lot of pangs about that, living the life that he had as an assassin for many, many years for his government. He just had to get this out of him, and when he had the stroke, that finally broke down his barriers. And I came along, and he began to tell me this whole thing.
That's right. As we prepare to go across the River Styx, a lot of people finally have the courage to tell the truth and get the wickedness off their chest. Will you do it before you die? This is not America. Patton refused to be quiet. About 12,000 U.S. troops captured by the Soviets out of German prisoner of war camps, going to slave gulags. Few of the men escaped, and books are written about the subject. There's been mainstream news shows about it, but they claim the U.S. didn't know. No, the U.S. knew and could care less about those troops. That's how evil the government was then. Can you imagine how bad they are now? Sir, I want to have you back up for a full hour in the next few weeks after the new year just to take calls from listeners and all the angles they're going to cover. I'm going to get your book, Target Patton. I know it's available at Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere, and I hope people will get it. In closing, we got about 2 minutes left. Other key points you haven't gotten to?
Not really. I think we've covered. Well, yes, there is one great one. The fake car. I thought that I would go and to the Patton Museum, where they have the car, they say,
that Patton was injured in, and I would be able to at last, you know, sort of see the crime scene and see what happened there. Well, I took an expert from Detroit on Cadillac, specifically that Cadillac, the 1938 Cadillac Limousine 7533 is what it's technically called, and we found out that that is not the car. It's a 1939 car that has been rebuilt, and the major discovery was that, you know, a VIN number, you can take a VIN even today. It's a vehicle identification number. It's soldered into the chassis, and every car has it. And this VIN number was scraped out. So there's no question that somebody wanted the museum to think that it was the real car, which they did, but it is not the real car.
So,
it's a 1939.
So more evidence of cover-up. We're going to have you back. Do you want to fire out your specific website, Mr. Wilcox?
Sure. I'm at www.robertkwilcox.com. That's my name, Robert K. Wilcox. But as you said, Amazon has the book, and it's something that everyone needs to read.
All right, I want you to have a great Christmas, great holiday, and again, I want to have you back up for an hour sometime in January.
I'll be glad, Alex. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on. Great knowledge. Everything that guy say checks out with my own research, and then he expands on it for us. Speaking of Christmas, I am not going to be live tomorrow. I may be live Friday. Tomorrow, I'm going to be downtown serving homeless. There's a lot of groups doing that, but I'm going to be with my children and my wife downtown. I'm not saying I'm goody two-shoes, but that's how I help the community. I also give money to groups feeding the homeless and helping old people, because we have to teach our children not to be decadent, and we have to show people how poor folks are living. So it's also an education. That's how I'm enriched, by helping them. And it's our job to do that. So, you know, I know it's fun to sit around sucking your thumb watching football or baseball and thinking about yourself all day, but if we don't think about each other, we have no future at all. You should also think about yourself and get financially viable. And with all these Madoff scammers running Wall Street, the dollar and the currency's dead meat. And Ted Anderson had a pitch for you today. The gold he bought at 770. They happen to get 50 Buffalo coins in that nobody can get. And there isn't even a premium on these. These are factored in at the 770 level. 800-686-2237. British Sovereigns at 252. Franks at 203. You can't beat that deal on Franks. And Walking Liberty half dollar silver dollars, 840 apiece. Just, you can't find a deal like that anywhere, folks. This is a great deal. Check it out. The brokers will be there through midnight tonight, 800-686-237. And it's still not too late to give a PrisonPlanet.tv membership. And yes, this show needs your financial support. So you don't just get all the great books and videos and materials at PrisonPlanet.tv. Your subscription makes this show possible. So get a subscription. Give it to others as a gift. God bless you all. We are out of time. Rebroadcast with all the informative guests we had on starts now on the web at InfoWars.com. And don't forget the free podcast. Have a great Christmas.